little back, little off the front lines.
Try telling that to the relatives of the hundreds who died. We'll spell out the reality on that. Meanwhile, back home, under cover of darkness, they start to move migrants in to a sleepy part of Sussex.
They could disperse to any part of the country and they'll never be found. Absolutely awful what they're doing. I'm very concerned for my grandchildren and obviously every other resident around Crowborough.
Yes, those are the angry residents of Crowborough. Meanwhile, in other news, a harmer for Starmer. Does Andy Burnham have the bottle as a Labour MP stands down in what should be a safe Labour seat? Staying with politics.
It's 1 week on from the defection that rocked Westminster. And Robert Jenrick tells me how his dad encouraged him, his wife has followed suit, and how he thinks Kemi Badenoch never liked him in the first place. I'm OBC's Natasha Clark with the exclusive interview.
Plus, into the world of show business, could sinners be winners with those massive number of Oscar nominations? But what were the movies that before topped the charts of nominations? You'll be surprised by some. 7 o'clock news on LBC, isn't it?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, negotiators from Ukraine, Russia and the US are heading to Abu Dhabi for talks on ending the war in Ukraine. Discussions between US envoys and President Putin at the Kremlin last night were described as constructive and very frank. Yesterday, Vladimir Zelensky said he'd reached an agreement on US security guarantees in the event of a deal. But Jim Townsend, a former White House defence official, has told LBC... a key sticking point remains.
I understand that there's one item that is outstanding in terms of Trump and Zelensky. I can only imagine that's the amount of land Trump is pushing Zelensky to give in on. But, you know, when I think about someone who needs to be backing down, it's really Putin backing down from this situation where he feels he can get much more off the battlefield success than he can in terms of negotiations at the peace table.
President Trump's at the center of fresh controversy after claiming NATO troops didn't join the front line in Afghanistan. He's renewed his criticism of the alliance in an interview with an American broadcaster. More than 450 British personnel were killed during the war in Afghanistan. Chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee, Dame Emily Thornberry, says Mr. Trump's remarks are an absolute insult. The number of police forces in England and Wales is set to be cut drastically from the current level of 43. Major reforms are expected to be announced by the Home Secretary next week. Ministers believe pooling resources will save money, resulting in more funds for local policing. The Metropolitan Police Commissioner, Sir Mark Rowley, says change is needed.
The way we can succeed for the public is going to come through big investment in technology and technology-led reform. All of that is much easier to do on a better structure than this 43 forces, and it's difficult. It won't be a straightforward path, but it is overdue.
The Conservatives say the decision will undermine efforts to fight crime. More doctors will be able to train to become cancer specialists at NHS trusts in deprived areas of England. It's part of government plans to end what it says is a postcode lottery in cancer care. And it's claimed more UK companies are moving to a four-day working week. The campaign group Four Day Week Foundation says 53 firms switched last year with no loss of pay for their employees. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,150. It closed up 11 yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather, cloudy for most with spells of rain through today. Some sunny spells will develop for central and southern areas later. A high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Right, that's it. Come on, lights out. You've got a test tomorrow.
Just 2 minutes. I'm about to reach the next level.
It's going off now.
Yeah, whatever.
Let's see. Where's the app? Oh, here it is. Ha.
What? How?
Oh, no. You're out. Better luck next time.
Mom!
It's game over for late nights on school nights. EE Wi-Fi controls help you get them off the Wi-Fi and into bed. More parents are choosing EE Broadband, the UK's fastest-growing broadband provider.
To verify, see ee.co.uk/claims.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 4 minutes after seven, Friday, January the 23rd. So much for that special relationship as President Trump causes outrage and there is an outcry as he managed to insult the troops, particularly British troops and other members of NATO, who lost their lives in the Afghanistan conflict or, of course, came back with life-changing injuries. We'll look at that in more detail and spell out what the President needs to know. In other news involving the President, what do you call a meeting of the leaders of such influential countries as Mongolia, Azerbaijan and Paraguay? Well, apparently they're going to bring about world peace. President Trump.
Everybody wants to be a part of it. The official formation of what is known as the Board of Peace.
No, they don't. In other news.
Is Andy Burnham about to return to Parliament and do voters here want him as their MP? I'm LBC's Liam Gotting in the constituency of Gorton and Denton.
To Sussex, fury in Crowborough as the first of those people have bussed in. Under cover of darkness, 27 of the migrants to be housed in that former military base. We will be in the area and tap into local reaction. Plus, I have to confess, I was not particularly aware of this movie, but could sinners be winners?
Sinners.
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 Michael B. Jordan in Sinners.
Yeah, sinners could be grinners with those Oscar nominations, but what are the movies that prior to yesterday held the record for the most nominations? I'll tell you later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345-6060-973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
So when is President Trump, a bit like an American, a black American songwriter, considered one of the greatest soul artists of all time?
It don't know much about history.
Just like Sam Cooke, clearly President Trump has no grasp on history whatsoever. What a Wonderful World by Sam Cooke. Now, he's been criticised for claiming in an interview with Fox News that NATO troops stayed a little off the front line in Afghanistan. Here's a little of what he said.
We've never needed them. We have never really asked anything of them. You know, they'll say they sent some troops to Afghanistan or this or that. And they did. They stayed a little back, a little off the front lines. But we've been very good to Europe and to many other countries. And, you know, now under my administration, that began because we had a very successful first term. That began then, but it has to be a two-way street.
Well, you can judge the success of his term or otherwise on your own, but he's totally wrong with the numbers, as was pointed out by NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte earlier this week about the number of NATO troops who did indeed assist the US.
There's one thing I heard you say yesterday and today. You are not absolutely sure that the Europeans would come to the rescue of the US if you will be attacked. Let me tell you, they will. And they did in Afghanistan, as you know, for every American who paid the ultimate, for every two Americans who paid the ultimate price, there was one soldier from another NATO country who did not come back to his family. From the Netherlands, from Denmark, particularly, from other countries. So you can be assured, absolutely, if ever U.S. will be under attack, your allies will be with you. Absolutely, there's an absolute guarantee. I really want to tell you this because this is important. It pains me if you think it is not. And under your leadership, this alliance is stronger than ever.
And here is the reality, acutely aware that there could be relatives and loved ones listening. The United Kingdom lost 457 military personnel and civilians in the conflict in Afghanistan. 616 people returned with injuries, some of which are life-threatening injuries. And I'm sure many people will be the first to say there are some probably still carrying injuries who have yet to be properly looked after or even realised because of PTSD and other conditions. That is the reality. And someone will know those figures all too well is former Conservative MP who served as Defence Secretary, Armed Forces Minister, also Leader of the House of Commons, and also can wear yet another hat, a former member of the Royal Naval Reserve. I speak of Penny now, Dame Penny Morden. Much to discuss here, Dame Penny, if I can just start with someone who, have served and you've been in the military yourself, your reaction to when you first heard that assertion by the President. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick, and thank you for the opportunity to restate the facts. And I don't think the President would expect or respect anything else from us. You've just given the numbers. We know that NATO Article 5 has only ever been triggered to support the US, which led to that NATO-led action in Afghanistan. But behind those numbers, Nick, are individual stories of heroism. Just to give you a few examples, I could talk to you about Para Pete McKinley, who performed amazing heroic actions to retrieve US wounded soldiers. 16 Air Assault Brigade did an amazing job evacuating US citizens from Kabul. The SAS and the SBS did incredible things to save US hostages. The RAF, the Army Air Corps and the Royal Marines performed, again, putting their lives in danger. Incredible actions to rescue and retrieve US personnel. And to be very unpartisan about that, I could invite the president to read the citation for the Military Cross that our current Armed Forces Minister has for his service in Afghanistan, Al Cairns. It is, of course, not true what the president has said. And you're right to point to how the next of kin might be feeling this morning, having listened to that. And at times like this, I think we just have to remember and focus with the US on our common threats and our common interests and ignore this kind of chat from the president.
You served in high positions, Dame Penny. You were Defence Secretary, you were International Development Secretary not that long ago. If you found yourself across a table from President Trump and his team, how would you handle that?
Well, I think Mark Rutte did exactly the right thing. I don't think the president respects fawning. I think that, and I'm someone that has supported the president in what he has said on NATO with regard to spending. I think he is right to push us on that. I have supported him and understand his frustration. But it is quite wrong to say what he has said about our armed forces. And I don't think that he would respect a nation that remains silent in the wake of that.
A couple of other things to unpack with you, if I can, Dame Penny. President Zelensky saying Europe has failed to, quote, take the lead in defending freedom. How fair is that in Zelensky's view, in your view, what Zelensky says?
Well, I feel for Zelensky. It is incredibly frustrating. And there is practically much more that Europe collectively could have done to create the conditions for this war to end. And for various reasons, we have chosen not to do that. I think even when we have decided to do things, we have faffed around for a long time before doing them. And that's both on sanctions, but it's also on giving Ukraine arms. To our credit, we have been a nation that has been pushing to do more. But we really are now getting into a situation where, I mean, they're facing a very, very difficult winter. We have to bring this conflict to an end. And you can only do that by ramping up the pressure, particularly on the financial side with Russia and giving them an opportunity to bring this to an end. So I feel for Zelensky. I have sympathy with the President of the United States when he says we're not doing enough. Britain still isn't spending what it told the President we would on NATO. Our chiefs have given us 4 years to rearm. The money doesn't start flowing from Treasury until year five. That's no good at all. And unless we actually start to look like we've got a credible deterrent, that NATO is bolstered, we are going to be facing the same situations and worse from Russia in future years. And that's the reality of this situation.
And Dame Penny, lastly, in a sentence, if you can, the establishment of the so-called Board of Peace, in your view, does that move the world closer to resolutions in places such as Ukraine and elsewhere? Make no difference whatsoever. Your assessment of the Board of Peace, Penny.
But, well, we will have to wait and see what practical good is going to come out of it. I mean, the president this week has said it's not a replacement for the UN. It will work with the UN. But I welcome the focus in trying to get very difficult problems that have been around for a long time resolved. The president can do some good, but I would hope we will see some consistency. And I hope also that he will appreciate not just the military bases he has across Europe, but also the skill and the courage of our service personnel who will be there for America.
Grateful for your time. Thank you. Dame Penny Morden, former Conservative MP, served as Defence Secretary, Armed Forces Minister, International Development Secretary, and as a member of the Royal Naval Reserve, 13 after 7. Let's bring into this conversation Don Bremer. Now, Mr. Bremer is a former US Navy intelligence officer, founder and chairman of the political consultancy group, the Bremer Group, and was a staffer for Republican Senator Mitch McConnell. Thank you for coming on. Mr. Bremer, does it embarrass you that your commander-in-chief got his numbers wrong? Good morning.
Good morning. I'm glad to hear Dame Fanny. I love her in the middle of her book right now. But
I should have kept you on. You could have told the story, Don.
For a minute, I almost got giddy. So hard act to follow. You know, I think a lot of times, I can't speak for the president, but I can always say that I think that when he speaks, that when he goes off cuff, he goes in from president mode into sales mode. And that's not always the best mode for the president. But his tactics, he continually uses the public and the press almost as he had a cat toy for a cat that he'll throw it and they follow. And while you're following the toy, he does something completely different. And I also can, not just in this comment, but in other comments the president makes, I believe when he speaks to the EU, he does it with exception and does not include the UK in his statements, because that's he kind of doesn't include the UK in his statements about the EU.
I mean, I hear what you say. He's rarely on the cuff. He's always off the cuff. But is that the way to perform in the importance of the office that he holds, Don?
Well, whether it's the right way or the wrong way, it has seemingly worked. I mean, even Mark Russell, just a day ago, on one hand, says how much he's glad the president has put the pressure on NATO, because we've gone from, three countries that were meeting the obligations to more than 20 now. But if you look at that, even that number, consistently, the UK has been the only country that has been consistent above its agreement. There was another, 17, 18 out there who just sat back and let the rest of the world do their work for them.
Well, yeah, but if you look, there were Danish troops, there were British troops, there were Dutch. That does need to be acknowledged, Don.
Oh, I'm not disagreeing with that at all. Not saying the troops weren't around, but if you look consistently across the board, and we'll look at Afghanistan, we can even look at Iraq, where, I did multiple tours. I can say, yes, you saw other troops from other countries, but standing side by side with the United States was always the UK.
All right. Enjoy speaking with, enjoy Penny's book. Don Brahmer, thank you. You're chairman of the political consultancy company, the Brahmer Group. You're a former U.S. Navy intelligence officer. Your reactions, particularly if you have my sympathies, go with you, or you knew anyone who didn't come back or who came back with significant injuries. And staying in the U.K., is he king of the North or is he chicken? Does Andy Burnham have what it takes to go for that seat? It's Gorton and Denton. Constituents have told LBC.
Andy Burnham, he has a bit of a level head on him. He can see things at a different angle.
Should be all right. He seems to do a decent job.
I don't really know what else he did. I mean, look at the clean air zone. That didn't go off very well, did it?
Mixed views, and we'll have more of a report on that later. 7:16, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The first three-way peace talks between the US, Russia and Ukraine are due to take place in Abu Dhabi later. President Trump is at the centre of fresh controversy after claiming NATO troops didn't join the front line in Afghanistan. And the number of police forces in England and Wales is set to be cut drastically from the current level of 43. LBC weather cloudy for most with spells of rain, sunny spells developing for central and southern areas later, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Lots of problems on the trains this morning. Fancy the Windrush line can't run between Surrey Quays and Clapham Junction, and that's following a signal failure. Southeastern are at a standstill eastbound between Stroud and Rochester, and also from Sole Street to Rochester. It's because of some safety checks. And Thameslink can't run as well between Stroud and Rochester. Also, Southern are delayed between London Bridge and Tulse Hill. And on the Underground, there are severe delays on the District line. On the roads, one lane's closed on the A13 eastbound at Canning Town, where a lorry has broken down. It's very busy on the M11 southbound to the North Circular Road. Already there are delays of about 20 minutes. And the M4 slow eastbound onto the elevated section.
This is LBC.
Quick question. Well, actually three, but they are quick. One, do you have a car? Two, are you looking to save on your car insurance? And three, do you have a Tesco club card? Well, if you do, you could get exclusive club card prices when you take out or renew a policy with Tesco Car Insurance. And with three levels of cover available, you can choose the one that's right for you. Over a million club card members are already saving money. So just search online for Tesco Car Insurance.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
To be
or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
Okay, do emails. Ah, burnt toast. And now I've got to sort my repeat prescription.
Or just tap the NHS app.
The one I've already got?
Yep, you can check test results, view your GP health record and request repeat prescriptions anytime, anywhere.
All while the kettle's boiling?
Before it boils. And turning on notifications means you'll know the moment you get a new message.
Mm.
We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Never miss a message. Request repeat prescriptions and more when you tap the NHS app.
Combine your pensions with PensionBee and take control of your retirement. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. Get up to £300 off city breaks and up to 20% off flights. That's something special to book forward to. EasyJet, get out there. Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:20, coming to you, Jeremy, you'll be the first caller for those comments made by President Trump. Quick look at some of the front pages. Only one paper goes with this on its splash or its front page, the Daily Mirror, and it's a one-word headline, simply the word shameful. The other story that's exciting quite a number of the papers is the potential for Andy Burnham, the self-styled King of the North, to ride to the rescue. I'll ask later whether he's a king or he's a chicken. Front page of the Daily Mail, does Andy Burnham have the bottle? The front page also... of the Eye, Operation Stop Burnham, PM's allies try to block return of his rival. I will spell out a little of how that might be achieved. The Daily Telegraph pointing out that it's now 4.5 million to be denied the vote as more local authority elections are cancelled, which is an extraordinary number now. And briefly, The Guardian goes with part of the story that I discussed with former Defence Secretary Penny Mordaunt, now Dame Penny Mordaunt. Stand up for yourselves, Zelensky tells Europe in fiery Davos speech. I don't know that really Europe getting all concerned and worried about Greenland, whether it's kept enough attention actually on events in Ukraine. The front page of the LBC app, Putin meets Trump's envoys. Kremlin says Ukraine settlement hinges on territory, which probably is a very accurate way of depicting it. And if the story is important to you, you can go on the Sun Online and see the latest in the feud between Brooklyn Beckham, or the Beckhams and the Peltzes, and Brooklyn Beckham and his family. Brooklyn Beckham now reportedly saying, we're glad we did it, and we're very happy at the reaction. Look, it's one thing to have a fight with your parents or your dad or your mum, but to say you're very happy that you provoked that really is a strange one, isn't it? All right, that's for later. Let's get Jeremy in Portsmouth on the line. Jeremy, where do you want to start with President Trump's total lack of historical knowledge and perspective on these events? Good morning.
Well, like most veterans, I'm appalled by the statement. For the record, there were three Victoria Crosses awarded to British forces in Afghanistan, two of them posthumously. The third was awarded to Joshua Leakey, who was in a joint American-British patrol. Joshua Leakey ran down a hill under fire and carried an American captain on his shoulders to safety in that action. I just think it's Trump grandstanding. He's got the publicity he wanted, even though it's adverse publicity. That doesn't worry him. He's a media man. He wants publicity, which he's got.
And the families, lastly, Jeremy, how do you imagine the families feel or felt when they heard or saw this news yesterday?
Appalling. I mean, they lost their loved ones, 457. How can you reconcile that when Trump stands up and said we weren't in the front line?
Thank you for your call, thank you for your service, and thank you for pointing out in such graphic detail the bravery of those particular soldiers. Jeremy, thanks. I remind you of those numbers. 457 British military personnel and some civilians were never to return from Afghanistan. 616 did, with injuries, some of which are life-changing, life-altering. Scott's in West Hampstead. Scott, your reaction to when you heard or saw those comments. Morning.
Hi, Nick. This is a new low from President Trump. I mean, I don't dislike President Trump. I think he's done a lot of good things. Mm-hmm. But this really, my My late father was a Royal Navy D-Day veteran, and in fact, his job on the 6th of June, you know, on D-Day, was clearing mines. He was on a minesweeper at the front of the Armada ships, clearing mines off Omaha Beach, where a lot of American servicemen were killed. Yep. And he'd be turning in his grave if he could hear what Trump had said. It's absolutely despicable. And I really feel for all of the families, you know, who lost their sons, daughters, sons, you know, their relatives in Afghanistan. I mean, I think it's absolutely hideous.
Can I ask you this, Scott? As someone, and I'm with you, and I think trying, as I said yesterday, trying to apply rational thought processes to President Trump will just send you round the bend. It's not possible. And I note that you said you support some of what he did, but as a result of what he said about military personnel, has he lost some esteem in your view? Has it taken some of the, if there was, some of the shine off Trump?
It certainly has. And I've had a fallout, and I've spoken on the radio about this over the last week or two. I've had a fallout with my eldest brother, who's in Alabama in the States, and he was a great supporter of Trump, certainly during his first term. And we've had an exchange of emails, and I actually said something I shouldn't have said to him. Okay. In an email, I said Trump ought to be in jail rather than in the White House.
Right, and your brother took against you on that, did he?
We're no longer communicating.
Oh, no.
Well, it's not the end of the world.
It's not the Beckhams, is it? We haven't got a Brooklyn Victoria Beckham on our hands here, have we, Scott?
Well, I hope not.
So do I. All right, maybe extend the hand of peace on the weekend or something. Or maybe look for a significant moment like your brother's birthday or something like that. Scott, have a good weekend. Thanks for sharing so much. 7:25 is the time. Let's come back to events here in the UK. And the announcement yesterday that Andrew Gwynn, the Labour MP for Gorton and Denton, that he will be standing down ahead of a conclusion of an ethics investigation into leaked abusive WhatsApp messages could pave the way for the self-styled King of the North to try for the coronation of winning the seat. Well, let's get into the area. Liam Gotting, LBC's reporter, has been speaking to the good folk of Gorton and Denton. Liam.
Good morning, Nick. These rumours just refuse to go away, don't they? We've been speaking about the possibility of Manchester Mayor Andy Burnham coming back to Parliament for what feels like months now, but today it feels a little bit more realistic than it has done before. Many ministers can expect to be asked questions about Andy Burnham this morning, and maybe, Nick, we'll expect more answers like this one from Business Secretary Peter Carr back in September.
Andy's a real talent. I think he's doing an incredible job in Manchester at the moment, and I think Manchester really needs him. I love working with him in Manchester. It'd be a shame for Manchester to lose him. Am I allowed to talk about my job now for a moment?
Well, of course, this all comes after Andrew Gwynn announced that he will retire from his Gorton and Denton constituency here in Greater Manchester on medical grounds. The Manchester mayor, known in Labour circles as the King of the North, Andy Burnham, is one of the most popular figures in the party and could possibly look to take over. A former minister under Tony Blair and Gordon Brown, he's long been rumoured to be considering a return to Westminster, a rumour that he has denied since the Labour Party conference. But would people in the constituency of Gorton and Denton want Andy Burnham as their MP? Well, I've been asking voters here what they think.
Andy Burnham, he has a bit of a level head on him. He can see things at a different angle.
Should be all right. He seems to do decent jobs.
Brilliant for the Labour Party. Because
he's not for the people, Starmer.
He's not for the people. He just doesn't, and he don't show it neither.
Same government, same leaders. The only thing he did was wasted a load of money on metal signs, weren't it?
Quite indifferent to all the MPs, to be honest. I don't think he'd be a good MP for any area.
I don't know the guy personally, but he seems pleasant enough character when he's been on TV talking or on the radio.
He's done a lot for the bus networks, but I don't really know what else he did. I mean, look at the Clean Air Zone. That didn't go off very well, did it?
Well, Nick, of course, it's not absolutely guaranteed that Andy Burnham would be able to stand as a Labour candidate in the by-election. First of all, he would have to stand down as Manchester Mayor, triggering an election for that post, and then he'd have to seek permission to join the candidate shortlist from the National Executive Committee, which could block him. Here's what Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer's had to say on the matter.
There's a very early stage. The National Executive Committee of the Labour Party will set out the process in the usual way, as it always does for by-elections. Andy Burnham is doing an excellent job as Mayor of Manchester. We work very closely together.
Well, Nick, what we know for certain is that there definitely will be a by-election here in Gorton and Denton, but whether Andy Burnham will or even can stand as the Labour candidate will likely become clearer over the coming days and weeks.
Liam Gotting reporting. A couple of things to pick up on there from Liam's report, not least the Prime Minister there referencing the NEC. And there are reports in the more than one newspaper this morning that there could be a bit of work done by the NEC to effectively block Andy Burnham getting that nomination. There's the other aspect, which is the majority in this constituency is 13,413. Now, you'd normally call that pretty healthy, but I don't need to remind you that with what would appear to be the support abroad for Reform UK, then 13,413 is by no way or means no longer a shoe-in in that particular area. So there's that to contend with. And then there's the joke doing the Labour circles. You've probably heard this one already, but it does sum up how many, not all, how many see Andy Burnham, the famous gag being a Blairite, a Brownite, a Milibandite and a Corbynite all walk into the pub and the barman says, "Hello, Andy Burnham, what can I get you?" That is the sort of gag that he's happy to wear any mantle at any time. If you're excited by the possibility of Andy Burnham, whether one person can actually solve the extraordinary breadth of issues that confront this country at the moment, you honestly think a change at the top of just one man, one person, is that will solve all Labour's problems and the country's problems? Surely the potential is everyone within Labour will just roll their sleeves up and have a damn good fight, won't they? There's also a fight going on in Sussex.
It begins. The first asylum seekers have entered Crowborough Army Camp, where they'll be housed under new government plans. Hundreds will follow. I'm Benji Hyer. I spent the day in Crowborough speaking with residents and campaigners, and I'll have a live report.
Plus, to try and lift the mood, how sinners could be winners and grinners. The extraordinary level of Oscar nominations yesterday for that movie. It's 7:30. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC. News headlines then, Dominic Ellis.
Negotiators from Ukraine, Russia and the US are heading to Abu Dhabi for talks on ending the war in Ukraine. Discussions between US envoys and President Putin at the Kremlin last night were described as constructive and very frank. A former Tory defence secretary has told LBC Donald Trump is wrong to claim NATO troops didn't join the front line in Afghanistan. Dame Penny Mordaunt has told Nick that British forces performed incredible actions to rescue wounded US personnel during the conflict. And the number of police forces in England and Wales is set to be cut drastically from the current level of 43. Major reforms are expected to be announced next week. LBC weather cloudy for most with spells of rain, some sunny spells developing in central and southern areas later, a high of 9 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Given that the status quo cannot carry on, Gaza cannot be the thing that it currently is, which is basically completely demolished. It also cannot go back to the thing that it was before it was demolished. Something new has to exist. And if it is something new that is run by Palestinians, that has huge amounts of investment, that can only be a good thing.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Caremark is here to support in the heart of the home. If you have a loved one who would prefer to be cared for at home, Caremark has you covered. Care in a familiar, reassuring environment. Everything done just the way they like. This is personalized care that feels like family. For a friendly chat, visit caremark.co.uk. There's no place quite like home. There's no care quite like Caremark.
Something unexpected has arrived in Happy Meal. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Hello Kitty and friends are teaming up for the ultimate collab. Joining your little ones on a fun-fueled adventure. Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 2nd of February, from 11 a.m, includes one pre-selected book or toy, while stocks last.
Imagine a place where you can escape from a rainy day. Get immersed in a world of rooms, inspiration and expertise. Where you can laze in luxury accommodation. And kids can feast from 95 pence. Tickets are free to everyone and include all the attractions. You've just imagined a day out at IKEA Croydon. IKEA, the wonderful everyday.
This is not just food. This is 100% British, 5% fat beef mince. Now for just £5.20. Hang on, 100% British for £5.20? Down from £6.75. That can't be right.
Oh, it says here that this is the Remarksable Value range. Over 100 family favourites that are the same M&S quality but at everyday low prices. Well, looks like this is not just food. This is M&S Remarksable Value food. Subject to availability.
Connect Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
7:34 is the time into the world of business. And as I referenced earlier this week, around this time of day, or a little bit early, a lot of figures are reported. And it falls to Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM, to tell us about those figures and any relevant importance. And the figures today pertain to what, Christian? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, 7 o'clock in the morning, always a very exciting time for me. This week's been really busy. We've had stimulating data releases every day this week at 7 o'clock, public finances, employment, etc. Now, we've got today retail sales, and this relates to the end of last year, what they call the golden quarter. And you really would hope and expect that in that run-up to Christmas that the tills were ringing. Well, what can I tell you? I can tell you that there was a small increase of 0.4% in sales in December. And that, of course, chimes with what you would expect for the month. But it wasn't enough to stop the overall contraction in retail sales in the final quarter, the last 3 months of the year, during which retail volumes fell by 0.3%. That's not very pretty. And I'm afraid people were hoping a bit of a bounce back towards the end of the year. It didn't materialise. And where does it leave us? Well, people are struggling to see that there'll be any kind of dramatic rebound at the start of this year. We know that wage growth is now cooling. We know that unemployment is still at 5.1%. The labour market is going to get trickier. And we know that there are all sorts of changes coming into effect over the next few months, including employment rights reform, but also, it should be said, some minimum wage hikes, but also some tax hikes, all kicking in April. So economists aren't expecting the great British consumer to enter this year with a spring in their step. And by the way, the latest tracker of consumer confidence in this country shows that Brits have been negative in their sentiment for 10 years now. We have entered just now the 10th year, a full decade of being gloomy about consumer confidence. I don't know what that says about us as a country, oh, Nick. But we struggle on.
All right. Why is Elon Musk making front page news?
Well, for all sorts of reasons, whether that's something ridiculous he said or done on his social media platforms, such as his flirtations with buying Ryanair, seems to have gone a bit quiet on that. But on more serious matters, his SpaceX, his extraordinary venture SpaceX, is, we're told, lining up to go public on the American stock market. Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, JP Morgan, the giants of investment banking in the US are being lined up and courted to handle the IPO, the initial public offering of taking that private company public and allowing investors to pile in. And get ready for this. There are suggestions that if it does go public, it could be with a valuation north of $800 billion. The company is extraordinary. I mean, listen, I defend Elon Musk quite often in conversations with friends and family, it must be said, because I know he's a controversial character. But my goodness, what he is doing for the world around us and what he is capable of achieving when you see those rockets coming back down to Earth and landing on a tiny pad in the ocean. It's pretty impressive stuff. Of course, SpaceX has great contracts now with the US government, with NASA, etc. So there's all sorts of growth opportunities there. So bankers are rubbing their hands together in Wall Street at the prospects of this one.
City AM Online is reporting that one leading politician could go after the banks. Who is it and why?
Yes, well, you might not be expecting this. You might be expecting me to say it's Andy Burnham or it's Zach Polanski. But actually, it's Nigel Farage, who was the only party leader from the UK to rock up at Davos this week, having previously derided that alpine gathering of the global elite. He has turned up, and he was quite enjoying himself, I think, in which he talked about how he would seek to extract cash from the banking sector. He says he doesn't like the banks, and he says they probably don't like him. In fact, he knows one of them doesn't, because they debanked him, and he's never forgiven them or forgotten about that. So he wants to raise some extra revenue from the banking sector. He also said that he thinks there should be a Brexiteer in charge of the Bank of England. Now, this would take Farage, if he became Prime Minister, into, probably not for the first time, controversial territory, because chances are that the next governor of the Bank of England will be appointed by this Labour government just before any next election, which means that if Farage became Prime Minister, he would have to remove the sitting governor and install one that he likes. And that makes it a much more intensely political arrangement. So people will keep a close eye on that.
Lastly, why might people in London have a longer or almost interminable wait for a bus?
Right, well, go ahead. The Bus Transport Group have said that increased costs, national insurance contributions and the general slow pace of movement in the capital means they're going to shed some of the lines they serve. It's a big blow for Sadiq Khan, for TfL. Just in case people are preparing their journeys around London, the services affected are the 80, the 93, the 151, the 154, 155, various others from Sutton, Merton, Stockwell. I'm sure TfL will put plans in place, and this isn't happening immediately, by the way. I don't want people to have to suddenly start calling a taxi this morning. But they said that it's just not viable for them anymore. Low traffic neighbourhoods, constant roadworks, increased costs. They're just saying they can't make it work. And this comes, by the way, after data released from TomTom showed that London is the slowest capital city in the world to get around. And buses tend to move, I think, at about an average of around 6 miles an hour. And a brisk walk would help you catch up with them.
And that's when you can dodge your roadworks, which seem to be growing almost by the hour. Christian May, Editor-in-Chief of City AM. Enjoy your weekend, Christian. Talk next week. Thanks for all your input this week. 7:39. More of your reactions to Afghanistan in a moment. Coming to you, Dave. But let's feature some of the social media and texts that are coming in. Steve says, Trump's comments don't just insult the dead. How many soldiers came back with life-changing injuries or mental health issues? It's disgusting. I think we have references to that. Robin Brentwood is furious with me. Your show's taking pot shots at Trump. He's only trying to bring world peace, but you've got Trump derangement syndrome and you can't help yourself. Gosh. Paul in Linslade makes a good point. How can our men and women who serve in our forces ever confidently go into battle with American troops after this disrespect from a draft dodger? Bring on the European joint forces. Dave in Horsham, you want to pick up on this idea of draft dodging. I need to just say that there was something wrong with his foot. There was bones in his foot or something that he got a deferment, but he didn't serve in Vietnam. So, Dave in Horsham, the point you want to make. Good morning.
Oh, yes, good morning. No, I'm afraid I don't know much about his draft dodging, but I had to phone in because I was almost speechless with anger. I am not ex-military.
Right.
But the things that he said are so disgusting that, I mean, can you imagine how the families of the veterans and those who were killed and seriously injured and who are still walking around with, you know, false legs and false arms and all that sort of thing, can you imagine how they feel? But what really angers me, Nick, and really angers me, is where is Starmer? Can you imagine if Thatcher was Prime Minister, what you would be saying to the President Trump?
Oh, that's an interesting point.
You know, Starmer should have been right on it, the same as the Secretary General. He should have been right on it and said, enough is enough. I've done enough snivelling, enough grovelling, but you've crossed the line now. So, mate, I'm almost speechless with anger.
You wanted to see more from our Prime Minister, not least for all the military personnel who served. Dave, thank you. You got your point across brilliantly. I have looked it up. Donald Trump received multiple deferments that allowed him to avoid the Vietnam War draft, primarily for attending college. Oh, I was right, here we are. And a final one for bone spurs in his feet. I knew there was something, but I couldn't remember what. This kept him from being eligible for service until the draft ended. His medical exemption came before the lottery began. Contradicting claims he made that he had a high draft number was the main reason. Remember, they worked their way through the draft. So that is just to get the right legality on that. 7:42. Now let's go to other matters. And we go to, well, what was a sleepy part of Sussex, but now house after some migrants have been bussed in under the cover of darkness, there is a different mood abroad. LBC's Benji Hire is in the area, joins me now. Benji, good morning.
Nick, morning. After weeks, months even of deliberation, finally on this, we have a decision.
The Home Office has now decided to open the Crowborough Army Camp for use as temporary site for asylum seekers. I told the Minister that we still strongly feel that's the wrong decision. Despite our strong objection, the Minister hasn't listened to any of us.
James Partridge, the leader of Wildon District Council, breaking the news just hours before the first group of what the government calls illegal migrants were moved into the army camp. 27 single men arriving early yesterday morning at the army base, as you say, in the cover of darkness. That facility eventually will be used to house more than 500 migrants at a time. Just some context, Nick. The Home Office tells us that the men will be housed there for up to 3 months while their asylum claims are processed. This site was earmarked by the government back in October. It has plans, of course, to shut hotels hotels housing migrants and instead host them in basic safe accommodation, it calls it, such as military barracks. The government says the move will save money and ease pressure on communities, but the government had to spend money repurposing the Crowborough camp to make it fit for purpose, allegedly bypassing planning permissions. And in terms of the community, well, it's expressed safety concerns about how asylum seekers will be allowed to come and go from the site as they please and enter the town just down the road or indeed beyond.
They could disperse to any part of the country and they'll never be found.
You're local, right?
Yeah. Very like, yeah, 68, born and bred.
Yeah. How close do you live to this camp?
A mile and a half.
What are your thoughts about it?
Absolutely awful what they're doing. I'm very concerned for my grandchildren and obviously every other resident around Crowborough.
Look, specialists said security will be on site, but locals have been protesting this decision and will continue to. A residents group, Crowborough Shield, launching a legal challenge against the controversial plans.
Well, there's been no consultation from the Home Office. The whole process has been very, very cloak and dagger. There's been little openness, very little information from the Home Office, which has given us nothing to work on. We can't, you know, feel comfortable and reassure ourselves that everything is going to be fine because we're not being told anything. If you don't tell people something, people are going to get nervous and they're going to, you know, they're going to want to know what's happening.
Andrew Tuck there from Crowborough Shield. The district council is also considering its own legal challenge. Here's the area's independent councillor, Andrew Wilson. He also opposes the move in, Nick, and the manner in which it was done.
To do it at 3:30 in the morning, some have described it as cheeky. I would describe it as insulting. Yeah, it's the end of the beginning, I suppose. And I'm hopeful that nothing will happen and I'm fearful that something might.
As Andrew said, this is not the end of the story, but the beginning. The message from the Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, is that Crowborough is the start. We could see similar scenes, Nick, of remonstration unfolding up and down the country.
LBC's Benji Hire reporting from Crowborough. Coming up after the news.
It's 1 week on from the defection that rocked Westminster. And Robert Jenrick tells me how his dad encouraged him, his wife has followed suit, and how he thinks Kemi Badenoch never liked him in the first place. I'm OBC's Natasha Clark with the exclusive interview.
That's later in the show. Coming up after the news, you'll hear from a government minister how they are improving cancer care across the country. If you or someone you love or know has that condition, does that chime with your reality? What's happening? Just turned 7:46. LBC News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
Negotiators from Ukraine, Russia and the US are heading to Abu Dhabi for talks on ending the war in Ukraine. A former Tory defence secretary has told Nick Donald Trump is wrong to claim NATO troops didn't join the front line in Afghanistan. And the number of police forces in England and Wales is set to cut drastically from the current level of 43. LBC weather, cloudy for most with spells of rain, sunny spells for central and southern areas later, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne, where one lane remains closed on the A13 eastbound at Canning Town. It's just after Beckton Road. It's because a lorry's broken down. In Ashford, it's very busy on the Staines Road West going northbound to the School Road Junction, and that's following an accident. On the trains, no Windrush line running between Surrey Quays and Clapham Junction. It's following a signal failure. Also on the trains, Thames Link can't run eastbound between Gravesend and Rochester. Southeastern can't run on that stretch as well, but also they can't run between Sole Street and Rochester. It's because of some safety checks. Southern are delayed between London Bridge and Tulse Hill following a signal failure. But much better news on the underground. Those delays on the district line have cleared.
LBC. Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £86 million.
That's enough to get your hands in the air. Woo! Wow, you really don't care. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
It took me less than 30 seconds to request my repeat prescription on the NHS app.
That's quicker than making this brew.
And I save time by not ringing the GP practice.
When?
Plus, with notifications turned on, I know as soon as I get a new message.
Big win.
So there's more time for this tea break.
So did you go to that restaurant?
It was so good.
We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Request repeat prescriptions and turn on notifications to never miss a message. Tap the NHS app.
Always dreamt of running your own business? It might be easier to achieve than you think. With a franchise, you benefit from a tried and tested business model and ongoing support. Kickstart your journey to business ownership. Visit the British and International Franchise Exhibition on the 30th and 31st of January at Olympia, London. Meet exciting franchise brands, watch inspiring talks, and get free expert advice. Book your free tickets today at franchisetickets.co.uk.
Daniel liked how easy it was to transfer his old pensions to PensionBee.
I've had quite an eclectic career, and with that I'd amassed pensions from a couple of different providers. I signed up using the app. It was really straightforward. I was able to give them a couple of key facts about each of my pensions, and then PensionBee did the rest of the work for me.
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to PensionBee.com. And be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
10 minutes before eight. Calling all people who might be living in villages or seaside areas, coastal towns, who feel they've been a little bit left behind with cancer care. Now, can I say first off, if you have it or someone you love or someone you know, obviously my sympathies and my best wishes for recovery. I know how devastating the news is because I've told you many, many times. Many decades ago now, I lost my dad to it, so it is a very, very chilling word. But what if you feel you've been left a little bit behind because of where you live? Well, the government's going to try and do something about it. And here's the relevant minister, Minister for Care, Stephen Kinnock, joins me now. Good to have you on, Minister. What is it that you and your colleagues are announcing today? Morning.
Yes, good morning, Nick. Hello. Yeah, I'm very pleased to be here in a cancer centre in Bristol to announce that the National Cancer Plan that we will be publishing very soon, an important aspect of it is going to be to address the postcode lottery. So for too long, speed of diagnosis and the quality of treatment has been too dependent on where you live in the country. We want to address that through a number of measures, but primarily around, first of all, technology. So the way that tech is for cancer and healthcare tech generally, it is rolled out across the country, is very fragmented. It's basically left up to different trusts to adopt the tech that they want to. We're changing that by, for the first time, giving NICE a national approval role on care tech, and then once something is approved, it is then mandated that every trust across the country must have access to it, and that it would be funded by the NHS. And then secondly, on training places, we've got to get more cancer specialists into parts of the country that don't currently have them. It's too city focused. Got to get out into those rural and coastal areas, and also more deprived areas. We're working with the Royal Colleges to target those resources, also with the BMA, looking at demand modelling and performance in different areas of the country, and then saying we're going to increase the number of training places in those particular areas. So it's about that technology, it's about the training, it's about standards and rolling that out right across the country.
Something that occurs to me, and I'm damn certain it will occur to you because you're a brighter man than me, is if you're moving people into rural areas and villages and coastal towns, surely you're robbing other areas, aren't you, Minister?
I think it's about getting the balance right, and you've got to get that consistency and coherence across the country so that it doesn't matter where you live, you can expect that access and quality standards. And what we found is that once you make more training places available in some of the underserved areas, you have then the doctors, when they qualify, they've put down roots in those areas, and they stay, they're familiar with the hospital, familiar with the trust, maybe have started a family in that area, got a house, etc. So it's about ensuring that you've got that long-term sustainable workforce plan, and that does mean some rebalancing. We don't believe that that will have a negative impact on the cities and the areas where there are currently more served. This will be a gradual ramping up of the capability and the capacity in areas of the country that have been underserved.
And what is your best guess as to when you can have solved this nationwide lack in some areas and tried to even it out, Minister?
Well, we have a 10-year plan, but we're definitely not waiting 10 years for this to happen. This really is a very urgent issue.
But I mean, could you say, you know, Nick, I'm going to come back and speak to you in 18 months and I reckon I'll have most of it sorted, or Nick, I need 2 years, or can you give me an indication?
I'd rather not be a hostage to fortune on this one, okay. Nick, but I think it's absolutely clear that certainly within this Parliament, we need to see a clear improvement in terms of access and also the technology right. being rolled out more rapidly than it currently is.
In a related conversation, you might be aware of a story in one of the newspapers today, the Daily Express, concerning their reporter, Robert Fisk, who sadly has incurable bowel cancer. He's written a sort of open letter, as it were, to two of your colleagues, Wes Streeting and Ashley Dalton, in which he talks about provision of mental health support for those who have cancer, and indeed the families of those who have cancer. Can I get a word from you on that, Mr. Kinnock?
Well, of course, my heart goes out to him, and I wish him all the very best in this very difficult time. I think we are investing significant sums of money in additional mental health specialists. Our target is to have 8,500 by the end of this Parliament. We're well on track to achieve.
Give me a context. Target. What was the number before, Mr. Kinnock? Do you happen to know off the top of your head?
This is an additional 8,500.
Oh, an additional 8,500. I'm so sorry. Right, an additional. Go on.
An additional 8,500. So, and we're on target to hit that. We are opening mental health hubs across the country. We're creating a sort of accident and emergency approach on mental health as well, and putting them alongside A&E departments. So you'll have both a physical A&E and a mental health A&E for people in mental health crisis. We're increasing the amount of NHS talking therapies that you can have access to. So a long way to go. I appreciate absolutely how difficult it is in terms of people who have this diagnosis and their mental health condition, but the government is slowly but surely getting on top of this issue and turning it round.
And just lastly on that, do you support the ideas put forward by some charities? They would like a meeting with you or some of your senior colleagues to talk about the mental health care aspect. Can I ask that you take that on board, Mr. Kinnock?
I'll absolutely take that on board and take that back to the department, absolutely.
Other matters. Should we hear an apology from President Trump to the families of the 457 British service personnel who lost their lives in Afghanistan and the more than 600 who suffered injuries, some of them life-changing? Mr. Kinnock.
Nick, our armed forces personnel are the definition of courage, patriotism, professionalism, dedication. They sacrifice so much for our country and have done for hundreds of years. You know, the United States, the only time that Article 5, the collective defense clause of NATO, has been invoked was after 9/11, and we came to the aid of the United States, as did many other European partners and allies. 457 British troops losing their lives in American-led missions. So I do feel very strongly that the president's comments are wrong. And
apology required, Mr. Kinnock?
What I do know is that our Prime Minister speaks on a regular basis with the President. Our Prime Minister does things in his way. He works behind the scenes, effectively building alliances, building coalitions. Just look at how he's delivered on that as a leading voice in terms of the Greenland issue and strengthening the European dimension of NATO. So I think he will, I'm sure, be raising this issue with the president. He stood up very strongly on the issue of tariffs and said they were completely wrong, particularly at Prime Minister's questions, where I think he really made that absolutely clear. So we do have a Prime Minister who will stand up for the values and principles. I know he's incredibly proud of our armed forces, and he will make that clear to the president.
You mentioned NATO, and of course Greenland. It's interesting, just to remind my listeners, your wife served as the Prime Minister of Denmark. Have there been some interesting conversations at home about President Trump's views there?
Well, look, she has been very, very worried, as all Danes have been. You will have seen the very large protests in the streets of Copenhagen and in Greenland on this issue. But she's also very proud of the relationship between Denmark and the United Kingdom, and so proud of the fact that our Prime Minister stood up for the interests of NATO, protecting the territorial integrity of NATO, protecting the sovereignty of the Kingdom of Denmark. And she knows that, you know, Denmark is a small country. It can't do this alone. It has to work with partners and allies. And I know that the Danes are very grateful to the UK and other European partners for really standing up and being counted in their time of need.
Lastly, how keen are you to potentially welcome back to the House of Commons? You know what's coming next, Stephen. Andy Burnham.
Andy does an outstanding job.
That's what it was going to be. Here we go.
Well, yeah, you know, Nick, you're very welcome to answer your own question if you want to, Nick.
Do you think it's helpful at this time that we have this distraction, this diversion potentially going on in that particular seat, Mr. Kinnock?
Well, my heart goes out to Andrew Gwynne. I actually worked closely with Andrew when he was a minister in the Department for Health and Social Care. I know he's going through some really challenging health issues. So, you know, he's standing down. There's going to be a by-election. The rules and procedures for that will be set by the NEC. But I do think that every minute that we spend not talking about dealing with the cost of living, getting the waiting list down, getting some stability into the world in these very dangerous and turbulent times is a minute wasted. And we are absolutely focused on delivering, strengthening the economy, fixing our public services, strengthening our European alliances. And that is what we are laser focused on doing, Nick.
Much to discuss there. We've run out of time. Stephen Kinnock, thank you. Minister for Care Minister, explaining how the problems nationally in cancer care will be ironed out. All right, let's tell you what's coming up after the news. When it comes to that idea of a board of peace, do you support this man?
We've got a ceasefire in Gaza, and we need to get on to phase two. So I support having structures in place.
Who's not up for it? Or this man?
If we're going to have any hope for the future, it's got to start with Gaza.
Who's actually part of it? Starmer or Blair? In other news, the shocking news that just under half of school leaders needed mental health support in the last year. And to lift the mood, all hail the success, how sinners can be both winners and grinners as they break the record for Oscar nominations. But which movie's held the record prior to yesterday? You're struggling a bit, aren't you? There are three, by the way. 8 o'clock news, though. LBC next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, 2 days of peace talks between US, Ukrainian and Russian officials are due to start in Abu Dhabi. It's the first three-way negotiation since Moscow's invasion of Ukraine in 2022. Last night, President Putin met an American delegation at the Kremlin. Speaking on Air Force One, President Trump told reporters he believes that he can bring the conflict to an end.
I'm doing it to save lives. I'm doing it for Europe. It doesn't affect us very much. You know, it's thousands of miles away. We're separated by an ocean. But I have an ability to get things done like this, and we'll see if I can get it done.
A former Conservative Defence Secretary has told LBC that Donald Trump is wrong to claim NATO troops didn't join the front line in Afghanistan. Dame Penny Mordaunt says British forces performed incredible actions during the conflict. More than 450 British personnel were killed. Government Minister Stephen Kinnock has just told Nick he's incredibly proud of our armed forces.
Our armed forces personnel are the definition of courage, patriotism, professionalism, dedication. They sacrifice so much for our country and have done for hundreds of years. The United States, the only time that Article 5, the collective defense clause of NATO, has been invoked was after 9/11, and we came to the aid of the United States.
The number of police forces in England and Wales is set to be cut drastically from the current level of 43. Ministers believe pooling resources will save money, resulting in more funds for local policing. Major reforms are expected to be announced next week. A group of MPs has warned thousands of people are living in mouldy homes that pose health risks. The Public Accounts Committee has described two government insulation projects as a catastrophic fiasco. Major defects have been found in over 30,000 homes fitted with insulation since 2022. The government says it's categorically untrue. There are widespread safety risks. And more doctors will be able to train to become cancer specialists at NHS trusts in rural and deprived areas of England. It's part of proposals to end what ministers have described as a postcode lottery in cancer care. The upcoming plan aims to improve early detection technology and speed up diagnosis. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 reopened at 10,150. It closed up 11 yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather, cloudy for most with spells of rain through today. Some sunny spells later in central and southern areas, a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
You know that guy I've been seeing?
Yeah.
Turns out my sister's been seeing him too.
Oh, really?
And I heard he's been seeing Kelly at number 56. And Dave.
Your brother?
Yep.
Specsavers opticians and audiologists own and run their stores, so your care is their business, which can make them rather popular.
I've got something to tell you. I've got half an hour with him this afternoon.
Specsavers. Your care is our business. Book an appointment today.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 5 minutes after eight, Friday, January the 23rd. While every sane person wants there to be peace, world peace, is the board of peace a step to get us closer to it? Is it right that the United Kingdom are currently saying thanks, but no thanks on that idea? As President Trump gets back to the US, having been in the snowy climes of Davos, there's more problems with ice.
Whenever you have a law enforcement operation, even if 99.99% of the guys do everything perfectly, you're going to have people that make mistakes. That is the nature of law enforcement.
This comes as ICE reportedly arrested a 5-year-old boy to use as bait. We'll bring you more on that in this hour. And back to UK politics.
It's 1 week on from the defection that rocked Westminster. And Robert Jenrick tells me how his dad encouraged him, his wife has followed suit, and how he thinks Kemi Badenoch never liked him in the first place. I'm LBC's Natasha Clark with the exclusive interview.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
As you heard on LBC News bulletins yesterday, the Board of Peace was put together in Davos yesterday. But unfortunately, there wasn't widespread joy across European Union nations. Hungary and Bulgaria, the only ones going in. Britain, through Yvette Cooper, the Foreign Secretary, saying we won't be there at this time, but they will watch. So no France, no Germany, no Italy, no Netherlands, no UK. Oh, some countries did sign up, though, such as Bahrain, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan and Saudi Arabia, all of whom get to the top of the league table for questionable human rights. They were joined by countries such as Argentina, Armenia, Azerbaijan, Indonesia, Kosovo, Paraguay, Turkey and the UAE. Even Russia said it was just studying the position. So what will the Board of Peace achieve? Are we right to follow this position?
We've got a ceasefire in Gaza, and we need to get on to phase two. So I support having structures in place.
That's Sir Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister, who at the moment says, thanks but no thanks, I'm not in it. Or this man speaking last year, who's going to be part of it.
If we're going to have any hope for the future, it's got to start with Gaza.
Former PM Tony, now Sir Tony Blair. So he says yes, Starmer says no. Who's right? Well, let's go back to the unveiling. President Trump and that Board of Peace.
This board has the chance to be one of the most consequential bodies ever created
And it's my enormous honor to serve as its chairman. I was very honored when they asked me to do it.
But what of the United Nations? Can that stay in operation as well? Well, he had a word or two about that.
I've always said the United Nations has got tremendous potential, has not used it, but there's tremendous potential with the United Nations, and I think the combination of the Board of Peace with the kind of people we have here, coupled with the United Nations, can be, you know, something very, very unique for the world. It's for the world. This isn't United States. This is for the world.
Well, someone else who's noted the countries that are not taking part is Katie Balls, who's Washington editor and columnist at the Times and Sunday Times, indeed has a column in today's Times and has been reporting from Davos. Katie, thanks for coming on. You make the point that there are many who are notable by their absence. What hope do you give the Board of Peace? Katie, morning.
Morning. Well, I think it depends what you decide the aim of the Board of Peace is. And initially, this was all about Palestine. And what has happened in recent months and was very clear in Davos yesterday is the Board of Peace is now a much more wide-ranging body, as Donald Trump would like it to be, one which could rival the UN and really put Donald Trump at the center, giving him a lot of unfettered power, if it goes to plan, to decide, you know, what countries to get involved with, what resolutions to push. And also that invite list that you just spoke about. You had all these figures on the stage in Davos yesterday, notably very few to no Europeans. But you also have this fact that Vladimir Putin has been invited. And I think that makes a lot of European leaders feel pretty queasy about the idea of getting too involved.
You touch on your column the presence of Sir Tony Blair. Asset or liability, Katie?
Well, what's tricky here is there are two parts to the board. So Tony Blair is on the executive board, along with the likes of Jared Kushner, Donald Trump's son-in-law, and this seems quite Palestine-focused. What Keir Starmer has rejected is the second part of the board, which is the one where you have Viktor Orban and others. But I think certainly speaking to figures in Trump world, when they're saying, oh, it doesn't matter that the Europeans haven't got involved, they are using the fact that Tony Blair is there as proof that, you know, there is this level of respectability. You might be looking at the human rights abuse countries, but look, Tony Blair is there. So I think it will be controversial with some in Labour that he is there. But then you get back to the ultimate question, which is, do you want to be in the room influencing the decisions, or do you want to be outside, perhaps being purer in your position, but not necessarily having the reach? Tony Blair has clearly gone for the former.
If you tap into the mood of Washington, Katie, what is the reality? Do you think that President Trump see ultimately the Board of Peace as a UN replacement?
Well, we know that Donald Trump has little time for the UN a lot of the time. We know that Donald Trump and MAGA, think about his recent speech at the UN where he accused them of sabotage for various measures. So I think they would like a body to rival it, and they would like a way around some of the UN decisions, some of the ways the UN spends money. So I don't think there'd be a sadness if the UN was, diminished as a result of this. And I think it does come to this point, which is 2026. We are seeing Donald Trump focus a lot on foreign affairs. And I think he wants to reshape the world and his image in the time he has left as president. And this is one of the ways to do that.
You've been reporting from Davos. What is your abiding memory of the last 5-6 days, however long you've been there?
Was that
a groan? Was that a groan or a weep?
Yes. I'm not even sure at this point. It was my first ever Davos. And I think it was almost, the Trump circus rolling into town. And you have all these countries and group businesses buy up these shop fronts on the promenade to kind of, and you know, you get as close as you can to the center. The closer you are, the more money you've spent. And this year it was very clear the American presence. They had various America houses. One was a church right next to the conference center that I think used to be used to cure sick people during the plague. And then further down, there was a delegate lounge. And I think just to take over the Americans, their presence, and the fact they weren't always particularly mingling in the evenings with others. It was almost the Americans would do their bit and then get back to hanging out with other Americans. While the old guard, talked about how much they loved Mark Carney.
I bet you can't wait to get back to the relative calm of Washington. Katie Balls, thank you. Check out Katie's piece in the Times today. Chunky column there. She's the Washington editor and columnist joining us from Davos, 12 after 8. Listening to that, Sir Michael Ellis, former Conservative MP and Attorney General. Can I start actually with a question I put to Katie? Sir Tony Blair, asset or liability in your book? Morning, Sir Michael.
Good morning, Nick. Well, quite frankly, as Katie was saying, the reality is that Blair is an asset for the Americans here, whose object it is to obviously promote the President Trump's Board of Peace. He's an asset for them because he brings legitimacy to what is clearly a controversial operation. Having said that, I don't think many people this side of the pond would consider him particularly to be much of an asset, because he is giving legitimacy to a controversial organization, and also because of his general reputation with the British public. But to be fair, he does know people when it comes to the Middle East. His work immediately after his time as Prime Minister, focused on the Middle East, was one that actually did create a lot of relationships for him, which is probably why he was in the mind of the Trump administration when they were looking for a European to be in this position. So I think it does depend what side you're looking at. But for the same reason, he's both an asset and a liability.
How will we know if the Board of Peace, is working, Sir Michael?
Well, that may be easier to tell sooner rather than later, because as far as the Middle East is concerned, we know that very few successes have been achieved. The only successes that tend to be achieved in the last several decades have been kinetic ones in one way, shape or form. But if we do see some progress and some, if you like, maybe reconciliation is too strong a word, but if we can see some drive towards a type of reconciliation or a type of, if you like, living together, working correctly, then I think we'll be able to say that it's doing something. But I can understand why the Europeans in particular are concerned about Putin's potential involvement and the way it's being set up.
Sir Michael Evers, thanks for your time. Your former Conservative MP and indeed served as Attorney General. In or out, what should the UK position be with the Board of Peace, and how is it to be judged if it's working? And in other news, red hot fury about those ICE agents.
The ongoing immigration crackdown in Minnesota continues to provoke backlash in communities. The latest controversy comes following the detention of a 5-year-old boy.
Yes, that's CNN breaking the news. The detention and then the claim that the boy was used as bait by ICE to lure members of his migrant family from their home. We'll have a full report after this. It's 8:15, LBC News Headlines, Dominic Ellis.
2 days of peace talks between the US, Ukrainian and Russian officials are due to start in Abu Dhabi. A government minister has told Nick that he expects Sir Keir Starmer to speak with Donald Trump about his claim that NATO troops didn't join the front line in Afghanistan. And the number of police forces in England and Wales is set to be cut drastically from the current level of 43. LBC weather, cloudy for most with spells of rain, sunny spells for central and southern areas later, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Traffic's being held on the M25 clockwise between junctions 10 at the A3 and 11 at Chertsey. It's because of an accident and there are lengthy delays on the approach. Also on the M25, there are clockwise queues at junction 7 at the M23, and that's where a van's broken down. On the M1 northbound, it's very slow to junction 9 at Redbourne. It's because of an accident where two lanes are closed. On the trains, there's no Windrush line between Surrey Quays and Clapham Junction. That's after a signal failure. Also, Thames Link and southeastern trains are now running between Gravesend and Rainham, but with delays. And also delays continue for Southern between London Bridge and Tulse Hill after a signal failure.
This is LBC.
Right, I've attached panel 1A to panel 3B.
I think that's panel 5B. Or is it just upside down?
Let's see the picture again.
Okay.
Done! Wait. Do you think this bit was important? Is that what...
No, don't...
Flat pack furniture is hard work. Switching your bank account won't be. We'll automatically move your regular payments over when you switch with the current account switch service.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on.
Beat the blues and book the beach with up to £500 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. EasyJet. Get out there. Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
Okay, done. Move that. And, oh, new ways to invest.
Okay.
Foolproof guaranteed returns. Invest today.
All right, I think I will.
Way before you seal the deal, check if it's real and if a company's authorised by the FCA.
Oh, thanks.
Search FCA Firm Checker.
Always dreamt of running your own business? It might be easier to achieve than you think. With a franchise, you benefit from a tried and tested business model and ongoing support. Kickstart your journey to business ownership. Visit the British and International Franchise Exhibition on the 30th and 31st of January at Olympia, London. Meet exciting franchise brands, watch inspiring talks, and get free expert advice. Book your free tickets today at franchisetickets.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 8, Board of Peace. Thanks but no thanks, says Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer. I'm in, says former Prime Minister Sir Tony Blair. Who's right? Khalid and Leicester. Who's right, Khalid?
I think they're all... I think this is preposterous. First of all, everybody well, wants...
Who's right, Blair or Starmer, do you think?
They're both wrong.
Well, hang on, you're either... You're either in or you're out.
There's no in or out. The thing is, where were they when children were being slaughtered in Gaza?
Okay, all right. If we can just, and that is a very important matter, but if we can actually go for the question that I'm asking, you don't believe at all in the Board of Peace then, whatsoever?
The thing is, Nick, is there no accountability? What, you know, for what's happening? Do we just brush everything aside and say, you know what, now let's
no,
move
No, I think... What the Board of Peace is seeking to do, as I'm sure you're aware, is to try and bring about peace. Now, we can go back over the arguments, and it is appalling the suffering that's been felt in Gaza, in Ukraine, in Iran, and everywhere else. But I'd like to focus on what could be a breakthrough. So just to clarify, you don't agree with Starmer, you don't agree with Blair, you don't agree with the whole concept.
I agree with what the Palestinians themselves want. Not what everybody on the outside decides for them. This is what the ridiculous thing is. If somebody took over the UK and said, we're going to dictate to you how you should live your life now, that is preposterous. Why don't you ask the Palestinians? Why don't we sit with the Palestinians and say, listen, what has happened up till now and where we are now and what moving forward, what do you want from this? How is it the Palestinians are not involved? This is where the ridiculous thing is. Why do other people dictate to you what you, how you...
Lastly, if you've had an opportunity to study the plans, and I'm not saying that this is right, but those who support the Board of Peace, and if you look at the illustrations, they would point to the most fantastic look in the future for Gaza. Khalid.
Fantastical or out of this world or whatever you want to call it, Nick. The thing is, it is the Palestinians to decide their own future.
But you think they'd be against turning themselves into... Well, it looks tremendous in the illustrations. They wouldn't want that peace and they wouldn't want to be a go-to destination?
Have you asked them? But, have you spoken to them? Have you sat down with them?
We're just going around in circles. Okay, you're not prepared to take on board the conversation that I want to have. You're coming at it totally one-dimensional. You're off topic. Khalid, have yourself a good weekend. Let's talk next week because we're not going to make any progress at the moment on that. 8:21 is the time. So let's try other matters. And the extraordinary story, a 5-year-old boy is at the centre of a dispute after it was claimed ICE agents, yes, they're in the headlines yet again, ICE agents used him as bait to lure members of his migrant family from the family home. Now, the US Vice President J.D. Vance has been visiting Minneapolis, and speaking yesterday, he addressed these claims.
And I'm a father of a 5-year-old, actually, a 5-year-old little boy. And I think to myself, oh, my God, this is terrible. How did we arrest a 5-year-old? Well, I do a little bit more follow-up research. And what I find is that the 5-year-old was not arrested, that his dad was an illegal alien. And then when they went to arrest his illegal alien father, the father ran. So the story is that ICE detained a 5-year-old. Well, what are they supposed to do? Are they supposed to let a 5-year-old child freeze to death?
Well, let's turn to Gustavo Solis, who's investigative border reporter at the San Diego public television station KPBS. Gustavo, appreciate your time this morning. Very early in the morning for you, I imagine, so thank you very much for getting up or staying up. What do you believe to be the salient facts here, Gustavo?
Salient facts are that a child was taken by ICE, used as bait, like you said in the beginning. The child currently, as I believe, is in Texas, in a detention center awaiting deportation with his father.
So how was he used as bait? Just walk us through what you believe the ICE agents did, Gustavo.
Well, from my understanding of the account, from reading local reports on the ground, the child was coming back from school. Agents stopped him outside the home and had him knock on the door. I don't believe ICE agents had a warrant to enter the home, so it was to their benefit to have the child knock on the door and increase the likelihood of someone opening the door.
The father has been identified, and tell me if we've got this wrong, but as Adrian Alexander Conero Areyes, if I'm saying that correctly. What do we know about him? Is he applying for asylum in the United States? Is he illegal? What is it?
Tough to say. Like, there's contradicting facts. If you listen to what the school officials are saying, it's different than what the White House is saying. And it's hard to get a hold of him because he's detained right now. I will say there's a lot of folks seeking asylum, applying for asylum right now. If you are applying for asylum in the United States, you have an open court case, an immigration court. You're generally not detained and deported if you have a pending case.
So the dad is being detained. Where is Liam, the five-year-old boy?
My understanding is that both the parent and the child are in a detention center in Texas. I believe it's a family detention center.
Okay. Local media in Minneapolis or across other parts of the United States, how regularly are ICE stories appearing and antipathy from local people to their activities?
Oh, it's on a daily basis, not just daily basis. If you expand it beyond Minneapolis, around the country, hourly, there's another video of a viral ICE arrest happening. It's nonstop, and it's leading. You know, I've been reporting on this since it started. I started being an immigration reporter 2016 during the first Trump administration. When this started, the predominant feeling among immigrant communities was one of fear. Now it's turned into one of anger, one of palpable anger. And in cities throughout the country, now obviously in Minneapolis, Minnesota, ICE feels like an occupying force in those communities. They are not wanted there. If you listen to the mayor, the governor, they want them out. And there's just this palpable sense of fear and really anger, and that's what you're seeing play out right now.
Lastly, Gustavo, do the ICE operatives themselves, do they seem to heed the local antipathy? Do they actually carry on regardless? Do they display a degree of hostility?
They do display a degree of hostility. I believe some administration officials feed off of the anger. We're seeing in a kind of a cycle, right? You see ICE doing something very questionable, very aggressive, people protesting against that. ICE using that protest to increase their enforcement tactics, increase their aggression. People respond to that increased aggression with more protests. And it just seems like a never-ending cycle of escalation right now.
Thanks for giving us all the background that you have, Gustavo Solis. You're an investigative border reporter for the San Diego public television station KPBS. I suppose I better tell you that the Department of Homeland Security put out a social media message. ICE did not target a child. The child was abandoned. As agents approached the driver, Adrian Alexander Conjeo Arias fled on foot. That's the man they wanted. Abandoning his child. For the child's safety, one of our ICE officers remained with the child while the other officers apprehended Conjeo Arias. I would be very surprised if there isn't some kind of video that emerges on that. Now, whether that will offer conclusive evidence, because we still, of course, don't have the case of the tragedy of that woman being shot earlier this month, but we will see where that takes us. 8:27, but we're coming back to events. But they're not really here in the UK, because the United Kingdom, along with most of Europe, has declined to join the border peace. But that's what Sir Keir Starmer is saying. But his master, Tony Blair, a predecessor as a Labour Prime Minister, was part of it. Kevin is in Oxford. Kevin, who's right, Starmer or Blair? Good morning.
Well, I think Starmer's right. We shouldn't be entering a border peace. If you look what's happening, Nick, it's quite easy to follow what's happening. Hamas, as we all know, are rearming. and resituating themselves. So down the line, I don't know if it's weeks or months, we're going to get a lot of hostilities from Hamas. So what Trump wants is he wants opposing people like Hungary that are quite, they're going to put their boot down. So yeah, so he
they're
wants
pretty
people.
Hard line, aren't they?
Yeah, so they're not going to mess about. He wants Trump. Trump wants them. If Hamas start playing around, Trump's going to go in. You know, all guns are blazing. He wants people on his side that are willing to do that. He's picking the right people. The right people are going to come down. And we shouldn't be no part of that now. I think there's enough destruction being done in Palestine. I think the people need a break and we need to rebuild it.
We're all coming for a break at the weekend now. Davos is wrapping up. How does Sir Keir Starmer emerge? I know he didn't go, but with the positions he took on various issues in Davos, how does he emerge in your eyes?
I think he's improving all the time. He's calm. I think what he's doing with Trump, Trump's blows like a hot kettle, you know.
Yep.
I think he's trying to gauge him at his own game. I think he's doing a softly approach. So I think Starmer, actually, in my eyes, I always thought he was lank like a pint you send back to the barman. I think he's actually improving day by day. I'm beginning to like him, and I think he's... He talks a lot of sense. He's a calm, and with Trump, you need calmness. You don't need to draw on him. It's not a Wild West. We don't want cooch cowboys facing each other, drawing the gun. We don't need that.
Lastly, I mean, even papers such as the Daily Mail and the Daily Telegraph had to say he had a pretty good Sir Keir Starmer had a pretty good PMQs this week, Kevin.
I didn't catch it this week. I was busy. I normally do catch it. He's facing Trump the right way and he's facing Gaza the right way. I think that we need to get round the table and talk, you know.
Enjoy your weekend, Kevin. Thank you. We will stay with this conversation. Then coming up after the shocking figures, we're going, the crisis in the classrooms. Well, actually not for the pupils, but for the teachers. Nearly one in two, 45% school leaders say they needed mental health support in the past year, according to a survey. Do you have someone? Are you a teacher yourself? Do you have someone in your family? Is it your husband, your wife, one of your children who's a teacher? What are the pressures like? Well, here's director of the Suffolk Primary Head Teachers Association, Rebecca Leake. She said,
we've got such a multiplicity of things that we have to tackle all the time. There's safeguarding, not to mention teaching and learning. There's families that are struggling. We're often seen as a certain type of emergency service.
We'll have more on that after this. It's 8:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. The news is with Dominic Ellis.
2 days of peace talks between US, Ukrainian and Russian officials are due to start in Abu Dhabi. It's the first three-way negotiation since Moscow's invasion of Ukraine in 2022. A government minister has told LBC that Donald Trump is wrong to claim NATO troops didn't join the front line in Afghanistan. Speaking to Nick, Stephen Kinnock said he expects Sir Keir Starmer to push back on the remarks during his next phone call with the president. And the number of police forces in England and Wales is set to be cut drastically. Major reforms are expected to be announced next week, aimed at freeing up resources to tackle crime. LBC weather, cloudy for most with spells of rain. Sunny spells developing later for central and southern areas, a high of 9 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents,
Donald Trump's Board of Peace, a motley collection of world leaders who've signed up, but an awful lot of Europeans are staying away, including Britain. What does this body represent? Is it a threat to the United Nations?
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Another early morning gym session skipped. Some New Year's resolutions set you up to fail. But a new Mazda CX-30 is the one you will want to keep. Available with 0% APR and a £750 deposit contribution during the Mazda January sale. Order by the 31st of January. Search Mazda. Available on PCP when financed by Mazda Financial Services by the 31st of March 26. Indemnities may be required. Terms apply. Participating dealers. See website.
At Lidl, get great deals on award-winning fruit and veg with Pick of the Week. Save up to 35% with cauliflower now just 99p each. And with Lidl Plus, get red grapefruit for only 29p. In store now. Lidl. More to value. Limited offer subject to availability. Selected stores GB only. Prices correct on 20th of the 1st. 18 plus terms apply. See Lidl.co.uk/LPTV.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use,
interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's talk a little bit more about the Board of Peace and who's got it right. The current Prime Minister or a former Prime Minister. Sir Keir says thanks but no thanks. Sir Tony Blair says I'm in. Mohammed in Rochdale. Who's right and why? Morning.
Morning, Nick. I didn't find myself... I didn't think I'd been finding myself agreeing with Keir. but I think Britain should be staying away because what's so absurd, I don't understand, is the person who was part of destroying Gaza and making it into the rubble city is now is part of the Board of Peace.
Well, he wasn't... He's not there yesterday. Are you talking about Benjamin Netanyahu, I assume?
Yeah.
He's not there yesterday.
Well, he's part of the board, isn't it?
Well, he's not a signatory. He was one of the presidential or prime ministers, no. I mean, he may be offering support, and I'm sure, I have absolutely no doubt he has spoken to President Trump about it. How is peace to be brought in the region, then, if you don't involve Israel?
Yeah, but inherently, at first, I think we both agree that if someone doesn't believe in a two-state solution, they don't want peace anyway, isn't it?
No, OK, but if you answer my question, how will you ever get peace if you don't involve all the key players?
I agree, but there must be Palestinian representative on board too.
Sure, yep, absolutely agree with that.
The people of Palestine, it's their country, they need to dictate the future, not some guy in some fairy land coming across.
Well, no, it's faintly ridiculous that we're going to have the President of Argentina, the Prime Minister of Qatar, and the Prime Minister of Bulgaria decide the future of Gaza. I agree. But you're going to have to get a weight of a global opinion behind them, provided those representatives are then included. Is it the way forward?
I agree there needs to be some roundtable discussions, but fundamentally, the Palestinians' voice must be voiced first.
Okay, all right. Well, let's see how they react to the Board of Peace. I'm sure that there will be more coverage of this to come. This is, of course, it's very early stages. It's not even 24 hours old. We'll have to see how that goes. Okay, we might return to that, Mohammed. Thank you. The time is 8:35. Let's come back to home. And are you a teacher? Have you ever been a teacher? Did it get too tough? Is the person in your life, whether it might be your husband, your wife, your partner, whatever, or one of your children, a teacher, just how tough is it? I know, dear God, I neither have the mental aptitude nor the educational ability to be a teacher. I would be the most appalling teacher. But it is undoubtedly tough if we are to believe findings by a school leaders' union, the NAHT. They've discovered that nearly one in two, or 45% of school leaders, say they needed mental health support in just the past year. The General Secretary of the Union says the poor well-being and mental health of school leaders is extremely worrying and should be a real cause of concern for the government. They also said that 3 in 4 school leaders, or 72%, but call it 3 in 4, said their job had affected their mental health for the worst. And that's up. The figure last year was 65%. So that's, virtually, it's a 10% lift. Well, let's speak with one. Head teacher, that is. Georgette Ayling is head teacher at Bohunt Horsham, a co-ed school in Horsham, West Sussex, and joins me now. Thanks for coming on. Can I ask you, why did you come into teaching? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I kind of fell into teaching by accident, actually. I wasn't sure what else to do with myself, and I wanted to go and live in London. I stayed in teaching because I love it. It gives me absolute joy every single day, and I've been doing it for 23 years. Couldn't imagine doing anything else. It's a real privilege.
Let's talk about the pressures. What pressures do you imagine are unique to teaching as opposed to other jobs and professions?
I think all jobs will give you pressures, but right now there are compounding pressures upon our particular profession. The compounding pressures of budgetary squeezes. We're finding ourselves in a real crisis of attendance, children not coming to school in the way that they were. And we have a recruitment and retention crisis that means there are just fewer teachers than are needed in our schools. And that's a real crisis for us at the moment. There are also more children being identified as having special educational needs. So what we're expected to do more, what we're expected to do is just more with less.
Let's talk a little bit about the non-attendance. I don't know whether you were ahead prior to and through COVID, but what impact did COVID or the pandemic have on that?
I think it's stopped the way that children come to school. It completely turned the relationship between schools and families on its head. And now we will see across the country, children come to school 2, 3, 4%, 5% even less than they did before. And that has a staggering impact on their education and our ability to deliver it. They don't see, I think families don't have the same relationship with schools. The relationship between families and schools, the trust has broken down in a lot of ways, I think. And there are lots of studies that show, I think there's just recently a recommendation from the DfE, guidance from the DfE about complaints that families are putting into Ofsted and to schools and how that should happen. That's really showing us that complaints are coming into schools in exponential numbers in comparison to before.
So who or what needs to do what to address this?
I think that's all of us. It's society, it's school leaders, it's families. We need to look again at what the role of schools is in a society, because we want to work with families. We all want the exact same thing. We're in the business of creating people. We're in the business of helping families raise their children, and we want to work together. I think it's for all of us to fix this problem, because we're all struggling with this together.
You're a young woman. It's not that long ago that you were in school yourself. Well, you were certainly younger than I am. You're George, and I assure you. You're a young woman. It's not that long ago that you were in school. What's the biggest change you note from being a pupil in your time to how pupils behave, are treated, whatever the issues might be, to pupils today?
I think that's easy. It's social media. The impact of social media means that when you or I left school at the end of the school day, school was done and we would come home, and the pressures that our peers may have put upon us during school were gone, and we could choose to go out with our friends or we could choose to step away from those pressures. But now social media means those pressures are potentially continuing right into the early hours of the morning, depending on whether families are willing and able to put boundaries on screen time or not.
And lastly, just to give us a sense of the day, and obviously I don't want you to name that you've got to meet Mr. Ferrari and fire him or something like that, my later day. What does your day hold today? What sort of things do you address? Are you able to actually teach yourself? And when do you think you might get out the school gates?
I'm really lucky to be part of a multi-academy trust, and I'm really well supported as a school leader. So I get a huge amount of support from my peer head teachers in the trust and from leaders in the trust. That means my well-being is really looked after. So I get a lot of time to get out in my school and have a look at what's going on in my school, to go and visit other schools in my trust, and to know that I can make the improvements that I need to make. I'll spend lots of time with my students and with my staff. So my day will include lots of moments for joy and positivity, and hopefully not too much time in this office.
OK, I'll let you get out now. I won't hold you up any longer. Georgia Ayling, thank you. You're head teacher at Beauhunt Horsham, a co-ed school in Horsham, West Sussex, 20 to 9. This is coming to you, Elizabeth. excuse me, this is what you're saying on social media. This is Alex in Watford. My last head teacher texted me just the other day to say, after 10 years of headship, an encounter with a nasty parent made her put in her notice. She's decided time with her family and no belligerent parents is a better option. This comes in from Jamie. Why does everyone now see every issue as a crisis? This has diluted the word to the point now it has no meaning anymore. Elizabeth is in Loughborough. Are you involved in education, Elizabeth? Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Nick. I'm a school business manager at a school
so you
in
do,
Loughborough.
Just to clarify, that's like after the accounts and the buying and the salaries and everything like that, is it?
Yes, absolutely. So okay. Anything to do with money, right. That's all me.
You would be a bursar, what I know. Is the old job of a bursar, is like that?
Yes.
Got it.
Yes, that's
okay.
Right. Yes, similar.
How stressful is that?
It's not a great place to be at the moment. I think my favourite word, unfortunately, at the moment is no.
Oh, Lord.
In education. I think your previous caller absolutely hit the nail on the head and took the words right out of my mouth. Schools in general and our teachers, and I should also say our support staff as well, are being asked to do more and more and more with less. We are having to take more out of the classroom, whether it's resources, whether it's staffing, purely because of the budgets that we are provided with. But we still expect our school staff to do the same thing and even more. We have rising need from our children, from our parents. And as your previous caller absolutely hit the nail on the head, we want to work with our families and our parents. We want a great and wonderful environment for our children. But it's really hard to do that with so little.
Talk to me about the impact of SEND, Elizabeth. What has that meant to the school or schools that you're the business manager?
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing more and more of that in schools, and that's not just diagnoses such as your ADHD or your autism, but rising needs for emotional needs, behavioural needs, and in many cases, our teachers are having to deal with that. Multiple different needs in classrooms on their own. We're not in the state previously where you would have a teaching assistant or a learning support assistant in that classroom all the time to support that teacher. There are a lot of periods of time where that teacher is on their own, and we're asking them to split themselves into two, into three, into four to deal with multiple different needs of those children at the same time and teach and look at things in some situations like potty training of children or, you know, moving forward with looking at brushing teeth of children in school. All of these things are compounding the issue of what our school staff are being asked to do.
Elizabeth, last question. How long have you been in education, working in that area?
For the last 5 years.
Have you noticed, what is the attitude, how is the attitude of parents towards both the school and the teachers? Has that changed over those 5 years?
We're very lucky. We have a wonderful school community at the school that I'm at. But our parents do expect a lot of us, absolutely, as they should. And that is rising. But as I said previously, our budgets are decreasing year on year on year. And we're lucky we have stable people numbers where I am. But those budgets net year on year with inflation and everything else are decreasing. And it's not a fun job to have to try and balance the books and also put what we need to in our classrooms to support our school staff.
Thanks for taking us through so much of your job. I hope you have a relaxing one today and as good a weekend as you can with all of this. Laura in Guildford, these challenges are not unique to teachers. Try being a social worker. They've been facing these challenges for decades. They don't get to go on strike for better pay. Their budget cuts year on year. Can't recruit or retrain staff. Are hated by the public for doing their job. Blamed by the public if things go wrong. No one cares about their mental well-being. I'm sure that is the case, but I mean, as I always say, it's not a race to the bottom, is it? We should be trying to help everybody. Michael says, the teacher you're speaking with is good, supporter with the message, so families know they have to support schools, ensuring that children are ready. I do wonder, and that was something I was trying to explore with that previous caller, I do wonder if actually sometimes it's the parents who are causing the problems. This is from Joe. At the end of dealing with schools, but as a parent, schools actively discourage parents being involved, not being keen to have parents at school. Zoom, a 10-minute parent evening, kids being empowered. They make decisions without parents' input, but parents expected to sort out the problems and these causes. All right, we'll stay in the classroom and also coming up after the news.
Well, she obviously doesn't like me very much, and she's lashed out.
Do you think she's always not liked you?
Well, it makes me think that, yeah. I don't know what she says about other people behind their backs as well.
That's Robert Jenrick speaking with my LBC colleague Natasha Clark, talking about, well, you've guessed it, haven't you? Kemi Badenoch. Plus, we're down to Crowborough.
Well, there's been no consultation from the Home Office. The whole process has been very, very cloak and dagger. There's been little openness, very little information from the Home Office.
That's Andrew Tuck from the residents group Crowborough Shield reacting to the arrival of the first number of migrants. It's 8:45, LBC News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
2 days of peace talks between US, Ukrainian and Russian officials are due to begin in Abu Dhabi. A government minister has told LBC Donald Trump is wrong to claim NATO troops didn't join the front line in Afghanistan, and the Home Office is to set out plans to radically reduce the number of police forces in England and Wales. LBC weather, cloudy for most with spells of rain, sunny spells later for central and southern areas, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Not looking good at all. On the M25, on the Surrey stretch, anti-clockwise, traffic is being held at Junction 11 at Chertsey following an accident. And clockwise is very slow because of a separate accident. Also on the M25, clockwise, it's slow at Junction 6 at Godston after a car broke down earlier. And on the Kent stretch, it's slow clockwise at Junction 1B at Dartford. A car has broken down on the exit slip road, but there are delays back into the main carriageway. Also delays on the M1 northbound to Junction 9 at Redbourne after an accident. accident. Two lanes remain closed. South Eastern and Thames Link services are now running via Rainham in Kent, but with delays of around half an hour, and still no Windrush line services between Surrey Quays and Clapham Junction.
This is LBC.
What's the secret to feeling young? Cryo chambers? Vampire facials? Forest bathing? Really? The real secret to feeling young? Simply living young. And with a new Seat Ibiza, you can roll young with a £2,000 Seat contribution. Or the new Seat Arona with a £3,000 Seat contribution. Both at 6.9% APR representative. Seat. Rolling young. With Solutions PCP, ordered by 31st of March 2026. Indemnities may be required. Say it finance.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Hannah entered the Omaze Million Pound House draw and won a £4 million house.
House, an actual house!
Paul won a house too.
That's insane.
Now you could be next. When you enter by this Sunday at omaze.co.uk, because one person is guaranteed to win a £5 million house in London with all the furniture and a quarter of £1 million just to help you settle in. Roger recently opened the door to a brand new future.
Is this a dream?
And this time, it could be you.
And here's the best part. You'll be supporting Alzheimer's Society.
So for your chance to win a luxury house in London worth £5 million, you must enter by this Sunday at omaze.co.uk. Over 18s only, no purchase necessary, conditions apply. £1 million charity donation.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, it's not worth it, let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. New year, new plans, new deals. With up to £500 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. EasyJet, get out there. Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It's a crisis in our classrooms. No, not the pupils, the teachers. And indeed, the teachers leaving in almost record numbers, particularly, I'm just trying to find the percentage. Here we go. Particularly, the number of primary schools. Primary school head teachers are increasingly leaving their jobs within 5 years. So I wonder what the pressures are specifically to primary that perhaps not pertain so much to secondary or different sets of pressures. Alex in Gatwick. What's your take on this, Alex? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. Long time listener.
Good to have you on, sir. Well done. Thank you. What's made you pick up the phone today?
I have to agree with the last statement. There's too many parents that use COVID and the fact that we were shut for X amount of time as an excuse. And yes, it is primary school children, because I feel it, because where I live, I'm near some schools.
Right.
And I find as soon as the school has to set out a letter for whatever reason, the heating's gone, normally a health and safety reason why they've got a shut or something, the parents go up in arms because they don't have a free babysitting service. That's what a lot of these parents are using it. They want to go to work and earn their money, quite rightly, or those that are sitting on benefits still need to have their kids educated. But what they do, they moan about the schools closing and then they're putting extra stress on the teachers.
I mean... I'm sure in some instances you're right, but you accept that in many instances, it's not they want to go and earn the... They've got to go and earn the money to make the mortgage or the rent payments, Alex. Do you accept that?
Oh, absolutely. Right. But what they need to do, yeah, is they sort of like need... They're a family unit. If they don't have anybody to look after their kids when in the times that a school needs to close for whatever reason, that's on them. They shouldn't then be arguing with the school or whatever. Sort of like saying, well, they have to go to work. Yes, everybody's got to go to work. Right. And then another thing, sorry, Nick, another thing.
Do you have children yourself, just out of interest, or nieces or nephews?
You what, sorry? Oh, yeah, I've got two granddaughters and of my two, yeah, yeah. Okay. So I've got two.
How did you, your children were good on school attendance, were they, Alex?
Yeah, well, they didn't have a choice because I used to run my house like a dictatorship. So,
oh, right.
You know what I mean, you go to school or you suffer the consequence. But that's because I've got a West Indian background, so we're quite strict.
Slow down a little bit. What does a West Indian background? What do you mean by that in running the household? Because I'm not
the reason because we're here in the UK. I've seen it over the years now. Mm. Kids know their rights more than they know their wrongs. Yeah.
Right,
so when
okay.
a child is misbehaving for whatever reason, be they have ADHD or any other sort of learning difficulty, a lot of them don't, but they'll go on social media and they'll interact with their friends.
Yeah,
that's a big problem. They'll try that when they get back home, but these parents say too many of them want to be their children's friends. No, so, be the parent first, then be your child's friend.
So lastly, noting that you now have grandchildren, so we're going back a few years, but if one of your children was clearly trying to con you or your wife or your partner and say, oh, I can't go to school, and clearly they would, what action would you take, Alex?
They would be going to school, and I will take, well, because I've got the opportunity that I can literally take a day off if I need to, because just the work that I do.
I would
go and assist with that child in the school, just
right.
because I've got the ability to. Or if they are going to stay at home, they're going to be doing everything that they would be doing in school. None of this sitting around playing
okay.
PlayStation or whatever.
So lastly, I mean, you're going to say you run it like a dictatorship. I'm going to say there's I'll use the word discipline for your house and a respect. Do you think discipline has gone out of too many households today?
It's gone, as I said before. Too many parents want to be their children's friend. They need to be their parent first, and their friendship will come naturally. They need to sort of like instill the discipline within their children. You don't need to smack your child. You just have to sort of like say, like, this is
set
wrong.
Set the boundaries. Set the boundaries.
That's it. You need to set the boundaries. You need to be on the side of the teacher. When the teacher says your child has done something wrong, don't automatically race down the school blaming the teacher and that your child is okay and doesn't do anything wrong. Maybe.
All right, Alex, I must end it there. Lots of respect to you. Look after the children and, of course, the grandchildren. Have yourself a good weekend. We'll see what others make of that. 6 minutes before 9 is the time. Let's come back to events on the political front. And it made headlines last week when Robert Jenrick decided up with this, I will not put, leaving the Conservative Party and finding his way to Reform UK. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, sat down and has chatted with Mr. Jenrick about the cause and effect and the reasons and joins me now. What you learnt, Natasha? Morning.
Morning, Nick. Yes, it's been a week since that defection which shocked Westminster. The dust is obviously starting to settle. I've been speaking to Reform's newest recruit, Robert Jenrick, after that very dramatic sacking from his cabinet last week. We talked about his political journey, joining the Conservatives at 16, and in his words, being radicalised by the Home Office. He told me how his wife has also made the jump over to Reform this week too, and that he'd made this very difficult decision after discussing it with his father over Christmas dinner.
But it was a subject of debate over the dinner table at Christmas.
Christmas dinner,
yeah. Not the only thing we talked
about. Of course, yeah.
But we did talk about it, and he's a very straightforward person. He just asked me in the end, if there was a general election tomorrow and you were not involved in politics, who would you vote for? I said Reform. And he said, well, if that's how you feel, then be true to yourself. And if you're a Reform MP, be a Reform MP.
He also reflected on the hate that he's got from his former party in the last week, including from the party leader, Kemi Badenoch.
Well, she obviously doesn't like me very much, and she's lashed out. I get that.
Do you think she's always not liked you?
Well, it makes me think that, yeah. I don't know what she says about other people behind their backs as well. What she hasn't done is really contested the argument that I've made.
Mm.
You know, in fact, she's confirmed it. I've said Britain is broken. She said it isn't broken.
But in a week that's been obviously dominated by international affairs, he appeared to slightly distance himself from some of Nigel Farage's comments on Greenland. The Reform leader has said that the world would be safer if America did have it.
This is going to be a very contested space. You can't allow Russia and China to gain a foothold. You've got to ensure that there is a very strong security arrangement in place in and around Greenland.
So do you think that we should be giving Greenland to America?
No, of course not. But
it might be safer if we did.
But I do think that the United States
has to have a strong security presence there.
And finally, I asked him whether after his extensive political journey, he had any regrets. And there was one I think many people will agree with.
Oh, there's lots of regrets. I mean, I'm the first to admit that I've got some things wrong when I've been in politics. I probably wrestled with this decision about leaving the Conservative Party for too long. And I certainly shouldn't.
Painting over mural.
I certainly shouldn't have left
that?
My speech lying on my desk in my office.
You shouldn't
sure.
have, yeah.
Too trusting.
Might not get in politics. Robert Jenrick speaking with our political editor, Natasha Clark. Before I let you leave the studio, Natasha, you will, as I'm sure, picked up on stories about the possible return of Andy Burnham, but equally, the headlines are suggesting it could be blocked by what's called the NEC. Explain what the NEC is, what it does, and how that blocking could take place.
Yeah, so it's called Labour's National Executive Committee. It's basically a group of around 40 of Keir Starmer's top team and people across the Labour Party, trade union representatives. And essentially, Andy Burnham needs special dispensation because he is a mayor. So this will be a five-person panel, we hear. So in order to step down, he does need somebody to basically give him the green light. And NEC sort sources have told us here at LBC that there is, quote, no chance he will get through this. The argument being that Labour will spend a huge amount of money because they're going to have to fight the mayoralty after that. So if he does switch seats, if he does become an MP, he's only been the mayor for 18 months, well, he got re-elected 18 months ago, then he will also need to get through an interview panel of regional NEC people. Other people, of course, who will want to run against him will be helping to decide this panel, and local party members will make that final, basically, decision. So he's got a lot of hurdles if he is going to become an MP, let alone Prime Minister.
LBC's political editor Natasha Clark reporting on both fronts. Let's take a quick call from Afzal in Hainault. We're talking about teacher crisis. This is your wife. What does she do in education, Afzal? Good morning.
Very good morning, Nick. First time caller to your program. Okay, I spoke brilliant. To Sheila previously.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so
well
she is working as a learning support assistant. It's been 5 years with the current school, but she used to work voluntary in the past. So at the beginning of the work, she was helping in class preparations, lesson plans, looking after kids, kids with minor learning difficulties and so on. And she was also helping with IT support because she's an IT graduate as well. So she was very happy. She wanted to go to work every single day. But in the recent years, the school is complaining that they have budget cut, they have shortage of, you know, funds and so on. They removed 3 to 4 learning support assistants and all the supply teachers, they stopped. So everybody is taking extra loaded. So she is alone going into 4 different sections. She don't have any breaks to have her snacks or even going into toilets and so on.
Goodness.
And it becomes a frustration.
Do you think she'll stick with it, Afzal?
Well, to be very honest with you, Nick, I worked at the uni and I was trying to support her by saying that why don't you leave your job and we will see what we can do. But because of this cost of living things, it's very difficult for me to survive alone. So she says we are trying our level best to see if we can switch the job, but it's really difficult. And this is impacting our family and personal life as well. Because when she comes home, she remains frustrated, angry, doing household works. I'm trying to help as much as possible, but it's impacting our personal relationship.
I'm sorry to hear that, Afzal. Best wishes to your wife. Such an important job she does. Thank you for being a first-timer. I know you've spoken to my colleague, but the music means we move on. Afzal, have a good weekend. Coming up after the news, fury in Crowborough. Independent local councillor Andrew Wilson says...
To do it at 3:30 in the morning. Some have described it as cheeky. I would describe it as insulting.
Plus, winners for sinners, a trailer for the movie that's got all those Oscar nominations, starring Michael B. Jordan.
I seen me in the ways I ain't even know was possible.
Love you, brother. Be careful. I will.
Those stories and more follow the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, 2 days of peace talks between US, Ukrainian and Russian officials are due to begin in Abu Dhabi. It's the first time three-way negotiations have been held since Moscow's invasion of Ukraine began in 2022. Ukraine's Volodymyr Zelensky yesterday criticised Europe for failing to stand up to Russian aggression, but the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen insists they'll continue to back Kyiv.
We have been supporting the heroic fight of the Ukrainian people for now 4 years. We are the largest supporter of Ukraine in the last 4 years, more than €193 billion.
President Trump is facing a major backlash after claiming NATO soldiers avoided the front lines in Afghanistan. Britain suffered the second highest number of military deaths during the conflict. Minister Stephen Kinnock has told Nick that the armed forces put their lives on the line to defend allies.
457 British troops losing their lives in American-led missions. I do feel very strongly that President's comments are wrong. And
apology required, Mr. Kinnock?
What I do know is that our Prime Minister speaks on a regular basis with the President. I think he will, I'm sure, be raising this issue with the President.
The number of police forces in England and Wales is set to be cut drastically. Major reforms are expected to be announced next week, aimed at freeing up resources to tackle crime. More doctors will be able to train to become cancer specialists at NHS trusts in rural and deprived areas of England as part of proposals to end what ministers have described as a postcode lottery in cancer care. A group of MPs have criticised two government insulation projects, saying they were doomed to fail. Major defects have been found in over 30,000 homes fitted with insulation since 2022. The Public Accounts Committee's warned that thousands of people are living in mouldy homes that pose health risks. But the government says it's categorically untrue. There are widespread safety concerns. And UK retail sales bounced back last month in a better-than-expected performance over Christmas. Official figures show December sales were up 0.4% from the previous month. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 27 at 10,178. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather cloudy for most with spells of rain. Some sunny spells will develop later for central and southern areas. A high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hey Sainsbury's, have you got anything to help my money go further?
Well, if you want to make some big savings, make sure to use Nectar Prices and your Nectar Prices at Sainsbury's. Together they can save you over £450 a year on your food shop.
Bring it on.
Download the Nectar app and tap into great savings. Sainsbury's, good food for all of us. 18 plus Nectar app required. For full terms, see help.sainsburys.co.uk/help/nectar-prices.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 4 minutes after nine, Friday, January the 23rd. If you were listening in the first hour, you'll know we brought you a live report from Crowborough, where the first of those migrants have arrived, a former military facility now being turned over. Of course, the government say that we're closing these hotels, these asylum-seeking hotels, but they're moving into sites and camps such as that. We'll be in Crowborough and then, of course, assess the reaction across the rest of the country. In other news, and also in the first hour of the show, trying to put right what is rather patchy care as regards cancer. Apparently, if you're in rural area villages or in coastal towns, you're not getting the level of support that you should. Care Minister Stephen Kinnock told me...
For too long, the speed of diagnosis and the quality of treatment has been too dependent on where you live in the country. We want to address that.
He also made certain claims about how cancer care has improved in our larger towns and in our cities, and I'll be asking whether you think that's right. And while a lot of people understandably focus on the emotional health of President Trump, what about his physical health? What about his diet? U.S. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy, Jr.
He eats really bad food, which is McDonald's and then, you know, candy and a Diet Coke. He has the constitution of a deity. I don't know how he's alive, but he is.
Yeah, you don't sound so great yourself, but we'll work more detail into the diet later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Just on that subject, have you ever gone like an entire weekend, or I don't know, when you're at university, or maybe at university,
just living off McDonald's or Burger King or Wendy's in this country. I don't know. Leon Burgers. Well, I'm trying to think. I'm sure there are other burgers. I can't think of them. But have you ever done a whole weekend or a whole week just on Burger King or Kentucky Fried Chicken and Diet Soda or Diet Coke or Diet Pepsi? It can't be good for you, can it? We'll look at that a little bit later. Now, if you were listening in the first hour, under cover of darkness, the first group of asylum seekers has been moved into a former military camp in Crowborough in East Sussex. Now, there are expectations of further protests and legal challenges, you may recall, and we've covered this quite extensively. There have been major rallies in Crowborough. The camp reports they received 27 men in the early hours of yesterday morning, but the number will grow to around 500 over several months. It's identified two. It is one of the two military camps that have been identified. The other one is in Inverness, by the way, that will ultimately house 900 people. Now, what we have to say is obviously these people have risked life and limb to get here. Despite the government, his government's promises and assurances, the number has not really been checked. And when they get here, if we're not going to turn them round, we have to put them somewhere. We all know the issues there were with these hotels, but surely isn't this just shifting the problem on? Well, I mentioned in the first hour that LBC's Benji Heyer filed this report from Crowborough.
After weeks, months even of deliberation, finally on this, we have a decision.
The Home Office has now decided to open the Crowborough Army Camp for use as a temporary site for asylum seekers. I told the Minister that we still strongly feel that's the wrong decision. Despite our strong objection, the Minister hasn't listened to any of us.
James Partridge, the leader of Wildon District Council, breaking the news just hours before the first group of what the government calls illegal migrants were moved into the army camp. 27 single men arriving early yesterday morning at the army base, as you say, in the cover of darkness. That facility eventually will be used to house more than 500 migrants at a time. Just some context, Nick. The Home Office tells us that the men will be housed there for up to 3 months while their asylum claims are processed. This site was earmarked by the government back in October. It has plans, of course, to shut hotels housing migrants and instead host them in basic safe accommodation, it calls it, such as military barracks. The government says the move will save money and ease pressure on communities, but the government had to spend money repurposing the Crowborough camp to make it fit for purpose, allegedly bypassing planning permissions. And in terms of the community, well, it's expressed safety concerns about how asylum seekers will be allowed to come and go from the site as they please and enter the town just down the road, or indeed beyond.
They could disperse to any part of the country and they'd never be found.
You're local, right?
Yeah. Very like, yeah, 68, born and bred.
Born and bred, Crowborough.
How close do you live to this camp?
A mile and a half.
What are your thoughts about it?
Absolutely awful what they're doing. I'm very concerned for my grandchildren and obviously every other resident around Crowborough.
Look, specialists said security will be on site, but locals have been protesting this decision and will continue to. A residence group, Crowborough Shield, launching a legal challenge against the controversial plans.
Well, there's been no consultation from the Home Office. The whole process has been very, very cloak and dagger. There's been little openness, very little information from the Home Office, which has given us nothing to work on. We can't, you know, feel comfortable and reassure ourselves that everything is going to be fine because we're not being told anything. If you don't tell people something, people are going to get nervous and they're going to, you know, they're going to want to know what's happening.
Andrew Tuck there from Crowborough Shield. The district council is also considering its own legal challenge. Here's the area's independent councillor, Andrew Wilson. He also opposes the move in, Nick, and the manner in which it was done.
To do it at 3:30 in the morning, some have described it as cheeky. I would describe it as insulting. Yeah, it's the end of the beginning, I suppose. And I'm hopeful that nothing will happen, and I'm fearful that something might.
As Andrew said, this is not the end of the story, but the beginning. The message from the Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, is that Crowborough is the start. We could see similar scenes, Nick, of remonstration unfolding up and down the country.
LBC's Benji Heyer reporting. Let's speak now with Kim Bailey, who's director and chair of Crowborough Shield. They're taking the Home Office to court over this, and indeed I think we spoke about this last month. Well, your hopes last month unfortunately have not materialised. The first have arrived. What were people saying yesterday and this morning? Morning again, Kim.
Morning, Nick. So, I mean, obviously, everyone is very upset. It's more the case that this, you know, the conduct of this government, but also the fact that people are just not being listened to. You know, we've demonstrated lawfully, peacefully, consistently. Our voices have been heard. You know, the media have reported on it. We've raised a legal claim, and not one bit of that has even been slightly acknowledged by this government. It's just, we're doing this, we're doing it whether you like it or not, irrespective of the risks and consequences, and they're going forward. I think it's just utter contempt for this town. And the way that Shabana Mahmood has posted out, bragging and boasting that this is just the first, this is just the start, they're going to open site after site, is absolutely disgraceful, and she should hang her head in shame. This is not something to brag about. This is a you know, it's a tragedy at the end of the day. They are disrupting community after community with no thought for the impact of the lives that it's having.
Reminding you of that expression, Kim, salt in an open wound. The fact that they arrive under cover of darkness, how did that go down?
Well, that's the conduct of this government, isn't it? It's just showing that this decision will not withstand proper scrutiny. If it could, they wouldn't have withheld disclosure, misled by omission, snuck these asylum seekers in under the cover of darkness. They would have done this openly, honestly, and transparently, and allowed this community the opportunity to identify risks and fears, whether perceived or real, but enabled this community to actually engage with the Home Office and with Wealden District Council. But it has just all been done in secrecy.
How do you rate Wealden District Council and their stance on this, Kim?
Look, so if you look at all of the other towns that have been through something similar, their district councils have raised the legal claims. They have challenged it legally, but Wealden District Council have done nothing. But they did not raise this claim. We have, as a community, have had to fundraise. I mean, we've raised nearly £100,000 to bring a case ourselves, because Wealden would not. It's still within their powers to take action. They could do an injunction. If you get an injunction out, they can issue a stop order, and they have not done anything. You know, you've got Rachel Millwood, who is a deputy leader of the Green Party, and you've got James Partridge, who is Lib Dem. They were happy to work with the Home Office to make this happen. They weren't interested in engaging with the people that they were supposed to represent. And, you know, at the end of the day, we vote for representation, not rule by decree. And what Wealden District Council has done, they've let us down. They've let the entire town down. They do not represent this community.
Lastly, appreciating you're not a barrister, but can you give us an idea of what your council's argument might be, and when the papers go in, what happens next?
So we actually submitted papers at the beginning of December. So obviously the Home Office and Home Secretary were given 21 days to respond. That response came at the beginning of January. And that was, we have not made a decision, and therefore we don't need to give you disclosure. And then what she's actually doing is coming after us for their fees, and trying to block the cost capping to protect Crowborough Shield so that we don't have the cost liability. It's absolutely disgusting. It's a threat towards us and a threat towards every town. You know, she says it in her post that this, she's going to open site after site. She's essentially saying, challenge us and we're going to come after you.
Stay in touch.
I think it's disgraceful.
Sorry, Kim. Stay in touch. The challenge has begun. Kim Bailey, thank you. I know you're going to have a busy weekend with you and your colleagues. Kim Bailey, Director and Chairs, Crowborough Shield. The first caller, Russ, you are in Crowborough. We'll come to the other side of the news when we can give you a run at it. And also coming up later in the show, assessment of what would potentially be one of the biggest Oscar winner movies of all time. They've got 16 nods or nominations. The world record prior to that was 14, held by 3 movies. How many of those 3 could you name? I'll put you out of your misery a little bit later. 9:15 LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
2 days of peace talks between US, Ukrainian and Russian officials are due to begin in Abu Dhabi. A government minister has told LBC Donald Trump is wrong to claim NATO troops didn't join the front line in Afghanistan, and the Home Office is to set out plans to radically reduce the number of police forces in England and Wales. LBC weather, cloudy for most with spells of rain, sunny spells later for central and southern areas, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the M25 in both directions to Junction 11 at Chertsey after 2 separate accidents. All the lanes are back open on both sides of the motorway, but it's still very slow. Also delays on the M25 clockwise to Junction 24 at Porter's Bar because of an ongoing investigation. Also delays on the A12 northbound to the North Circular Road. A car's just broken down, so one lane is closed for recovery. On the trains, London Overground's Windrush line can't run between Surrey Quays and Clapham Junction. Also delays of about 20 minutes on London Northwestern and Avanti West Coast services southbound from Watford Junction to Euston, and also Southeastern and Thameslink trains remain disrupted at Raynham after the safety checks.
LBC.
Quick,
question. Well, actually three, but they are quick. One, do you have a car? Two, are you looking to save on your car insurance? And three, do you have a Tesco club card? Well, if you do, you could get exclusive club card prices when you take out or renew a policy with Tesco car insurance. And with three levels of cover available, you can choose the one that's right for you. Over a million club card members are already saving money. So just search online for Tesco car insurance.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Another early morning gym session skipped. Some New Year's resolutions set you up to fail. But a new Mazda CX-30 is the one you will want to keep. Available with 0% APR and a £750 deposit contribution during the Mazda January sale. Order by the 31st of January. Search Mazda. Available on PCP when financed by Mazda Financial Services by the 31st of March 26. Indemnities may be required. Terms apply. Participating dealers. See website.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Always dreamt of running your own business? It might be easier to achieve than you think. With a franchise, you benefit from a tried and tested business model and ongoing support. Kickstart your journey to business ownership. Visit the British and International Franchise Exhibition on the 30th and 31st of January at Olympia, London. Meet exciting franchise brands, watch inspiring talks, and get free expert advice. Book your free tickets today at franchisetickets.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Right, let's get to Crowborough. Russ is standing by. OK, Russ, when did you hear and how did you react? The first arrivals are in. Morning.
Good morning, Nick. When did I hear? Oh, probably, well, the original plans were in, I believe, October. But
sorry, of the arrivals. When did you hear about the arrivals? I'm so sorry.
Oh, that was yesterday, really. That's the first I heard about it. But
how
we knew.
You, how did you react?
Well, I want to take the emotion out of it, but we're absolutely furious. I mean, as you can probably imagine, it's like, yeah. You know, what we're headed into now is, you know, it's like, I understand they want to reduce the pull factor. I get that. You know, everybody gets that, and that's why they put them in, yeah, the where they are. But I mean, have you seen the accommodation? I mean, the accommodation is, you know, very, very basic. And it's, for me, it's like taking a wasp's nest to a packed beach and giving it a whack and then walking off. You know, basically, you're just going to really annoy these people, and then they're going to be exposed to the whole community. And I just cannot understand or even work out what the logic is with it.
What do you make, my colleague Benji Hire filing the report, they're all young males?
Increase the male population of this town by 6%.
What's your greatest fear?
So my greatest fear is obviously my daughter.
Might I ask her age?
Yes, she's 13.
Right.
So she's just at that point where, you know, she wants to go out after school into the town with her friends. We're not doing any of that.
No, of course. What are the parents of her friends saying to you, Russ?
I think broadly it's the same. I think some people are kind of denying the impact, but you know, in the main, I think it's recognised it's going to be a real problem. And I have to say, you know, Crowborough Shield just been absolutely amazing talking for the community, you know.
I spoke to Kim from Crowborough Shield and she questioned what sort of work and support you've had from your local authority, Wealden. How would you respond to what they have or haven't done for you?
I'd say they've done absolutely nothing, as Kim said, but I'd say they're scared. They're scared to make a decision and... you know, and I think Crowborough Shield is really showing, you know, how ridiculous they've been.
Of course, some would say, Russ, by the way, I don't subscribe to this, that this is just NIMBYism by you. These folk have to go somewhere. Why shouldn't they go to this army base, which we are told by the government is perfectly suited to their requirements?
Again, I get that, and I get reducing the pull factor, but there is loads of other places that you could, I mean, you just got to look on a map. There's a place in Dartmoor, you know, an ex prison, you know, away from the community. There's loads of other areas. And as she says, you know, Shabana Mahmood says, this is just the start. You know, she's identified loads of other areas, and what that looks like, God only knows.
And almost boasting about it, as Kim Bailey told me a few minutes ago.
Absolutely, yeah, the smirk on her face when she basically said, take us to the court and we'll fight it, you know, and it's just really sickening.
Look after yourself and the family. Thank you for that. Let's pick up on what you're saying on some texts. Doug, I don't recall there being such problems housing asylum seekers and illegal immigrants when the UK had a returns agreement with the EU. I wonder how many of those who are now enraged voted to take back control. Well, it wasn't going completely brilliantly either, but certainly the problem has grown. You're right. Karen says it's disgusting what the Home Office and the Labour government are doing to this country. Crowborough is a smallish town. The Territorial Army base was used by children. Now what have they got? Nothing but illegal immigrant, legal male army-aged men. This is wrong. The government should resign. Okay, let's keep that coming. Mohammed in South Shields. Mohammed, your view on what's happening down in sleepy part of Sussex. It was once sleepy anyway. Morning.
Morning, Nick. This is a desperately sad situation on both sides. You know, they don't want them in London. They don't want them in Epping. They don't want them in Manchester. They don't want them in Newcastle. They don't want them in Glasgow. They don't want them in Inverness. I understand, Nick, right? And hear us out before anything, Nick, it's really important. I understand that everybody's upset, our asylum seekers, and everybody's upset. There's thousands coming to their villages. They've got to go somewhere. And the other point, Nick, that I must make that no one else has ever made, these people, Nick, are human beings.
Yes, yes, they are. Of course.
They've got to go somewhere. We've got them in South Shields, Nick. We've got them in Newcastle. You know, I see them in the town centre of South Shields. I have cups of coffee with them because I can speak Arabic.
What do they tell you?
They've just run from the home villages because the fear, persecution and stuff like that, you know.
Are they happy here or are they surprised at the hostility?
A lot of people that I spoke to in private, Nick, on a one-to-one has said, you know, they're here out of sheer desperation. They don't want to leave their mums behind. They don't want to leave their family behind. But they're here out of sheer desperation.
Do any of them say, you know what, Mohammed, I wouldn't mind going back?
Do you know what? A few of them said that they want to go back, but with the state of the place is, where they're from, they're too frightened to go back.
Their goal is to settle here, to get a job, to pay taxes, to possibly raise a family. Is that what they tell you?
Do you know what, Nick? That's exactly what they want. Mm. They raise a family, to get a job, to raise their family, lucky enough to get married, pay the taxes, and contribute something back to the society. That's what they've said, Nick.
How fascinating that you're able to talk to them with your knowledge of Arabic. Mohammed, thank you. Look after yourself. John's in Croydon. John, your take. Hello, sir. You're on the radio.
Morning, Nick. Yeah. Right. All these fellas come from different cultures and countries. Mm. We have so many different communities in this country. Mm. They all must have a community for where they come from. Okay,
right.
So you discuss with what they call their community leaders, make them responsible with a bond, put these guys into their own community, give them work, cleaning the streets, helping out in shops. Okay,
but they might not
make
have
them
room.
Make them feel,
John. John, they might not have. They might not have room. I mean, if you take, so I live in a part of London, I live in Blackheath, which is in Lewisham. Lewisham, for whatever reason, because quite a high number of Turkish people who settled in and around Lewisham, so there's a lot of sort of Turkish stores and Turkish shops, but that doesn't mean they've got room for loads of Turkish people in Lewisham, John.
Do you think Crowborough's got room?
No,
come on,
no,
Nick.
No,
in their own community. They are responsible for housing them, looking after them.
John,
and bring them.
Respectfully, sir, you're totally ignoring my point. Just because there are, let's, for the purpose of debate, let's just say that a lot of Bulgarians live in Kilburn. I've made this up, but that doesn't mean there's houses waiting for more Bulgarians in Kilburn, does it?
No, but they can, It's what? The principle. They have to discuss it, find ways round it, not just bung them somewhere in a village where you're going to upset the local community.
Totally agree with you on the latter point. But I just think the first point needs to be thought, and I see what you're trying to do, and you're right, but I don't know that's the automatic solution. John, let's see what others make of it. Have a good weekend. And let's talk about other matters nationally, which is the fact that provision of cancer care nationally is too patchy, particularly if you're in rural, parts of England or coastal towns? Well, in the first hour, Care Minister Stephen Kinnock spelled out how those areas will get more doctors and further funding. But he started off by telling me in a little more detail how the plan would work.
I'm very pleased to be here in a cancer centre in Bristol to announce that the National Cancer Plan that we will be publishing very soon, an important aspect of it is going to be to address the postcode lottery. So for too long, speed of diagnosis and the quality of treatment has been too dependent on where you live in the country. We want to address that through a number of measures, but primarily around, first of all, technology. So the way that tech is for cancer and healthcare tech generally, it is rolled out across the country, is very fragmented. It's basically left up to different trusts to adopt the tech that they want to. We're changing that by, for the first time, giving NICE a national approval role on care tech, and then once something is approved, it is then mandated that every trust across the country must have access to it, and that it would be funded by the NHS. And then secondly, on training places, we've got to get more cancer specialists into parts of the country that don't currently have them. It's too city focused. Got to get out into those rural and coastal areas, and also more deprived areas. We're working with the Royal Colleges to target those resources, also with the BMA, looking at demand modelling and performance in different areas of the country, and then saying we're going to increase the number of training places in those particular areas. So it's about that technology, it's about the training, it's about standards and rolling that out right across the country.
Something that occurs to me, and I'm damn certain it would occur to you because you're a brighter man than me, is if you're moving people into rural areas and villages and coastal towns, surely you're robbing other areas, aren't you, Minister?
I think it's about getting the balance right, and you've got to get that consistency and coherence across the country so that it doesn't matter where you live, you can expect that access and quality standards. And what we found is that once you make more training places available in some of the underserved areas, you have then the doctors, when they qualify, they've put down roots in those areas, and they stay, they're familiar with the hospital, familiar with the trust, maybe have started a family in that area, got a house, etc. So it's about ensuring that you've got that long-term sustainable workforce plan, and that does mean some rebalancing. We don't believe that that will have a negative impact on the cities and the areas where there are currently more served. This will be a gradual ramping up of the capability and the capacity in areas of the country that have been underserved.
And what is your best guess as to when you can have solved this nationwide lack in some areas and tried to even it out, Minister?
Well, we have a 10-year plan, but we're definitely not waiting 10 years for this to happen. This really is a very urgent issue.
But I mean, could you say, you know, Nick, I'm going to come back and speak to you in 18 months and I reckon I'll have most of it sorted, or Nick, I need 2 years, or can you give me an indication?
I'd rather not be a hostage to fortune on this one, okay. Nick, but I think it's absolutely clear that certainly within this Parliament, we need to see a clear improvement in terms of access and also the technology being rolled out more rapidly than it currently is.
Care Minister Stephen Kinnock speaking within the first hour. Calls already coming in on that. Tina, you'll be the first caller. I hope you can hold the other side of the news when I can give you a fair run at it. And also, staying with health matters, the extraordinary diet as put forward by the US equivalent of the Health Secretary, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. You might question the state of President Trump's emotional health, but what of his physical health if he lifts off burgers and Diet Coke or Diet Pepsi, whichever it might be? We'll look at that in detail as well. 9:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. The news is with Dominic Ellis.
2 days of peace talks between US, Ukrainian and Russian officials are due to begin in Abu Dhabi. The negotiations follow President Putin's meeting with an American delegation last night, described by the Kremlin as useful. President Trump is facing a backlash for claiming NATO soldiers avoided the front line in the war in Afghanistan. A government minister has told LBC the remarks are wrong. 457 British service personnel were killed in the conflict. And the number of police forces in England and Wales is set to be cut drastically from the current level of 43. Major reforms are expected to be announced next week. LBC weather cloudy for most, with spells of rain, some sunny spells developing in central and southern areas, a high of 9 degrees.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall.
The Prime Minister, you talk about that relationship, Culture Secretary, the Prime Minister has set great store by his relationship with President Trump. What influence is he wielding right now?
He's one of the only people in the world who is able to pick up the phone to the President of the United States.
Is there still a special relationship between our two countries?
At times we've had disagreements and we've not been shy about saying so when we have.
This is a man, Culture Secretary, who imposes tariffs on us for simply saying that he shouldn't invade Greenland, but currently has no tariffs whatsoever on Russia.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall. Sunday morning from 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Okay, done. Move that. And, oh, new ways to invest.
Okay.
Foolproof guaranteed returns. Invest today.
All right, I think I will.
Way before you seal the deal, check if it's real and if a company's authorised by the FCA.
Oh, thanks.
Search FCA Firm Checker.
Hillary's huge winter sale is on. And now there's even more savings for the window wise, with an extra 10% off everything until the 2nd of February. That's on top of up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, keep the cold out and the cozy in with free thermal lining on our favourite curtains and Roman blinds. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. Conditions apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Just hearing that word cancer is enough, isn't it, to shock you? Sadly, as I know from personal experience, as I've told you on many occasions, from my late dad, it's horrific. But imagine if you're in a part of the country where their SEP care is not very good. Well, let's hope the government can put it right, because that, as we've heard, is the plan, the pledge, the promise, whatever you want to say, from Stephen Kinnock. Tina's in Norwich. Tina, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Oh, hi. Hi, Nick. Sorry, first-time caller.
Good to have you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you. What I'd like to say is I went to the GP several times, saw several different GPs, and eventually I was diagnosed with stage 3 C ovarian cancer. And it had been left.
Over how long a period from your first appointment? Sorry, go ahead.
So I actually went back to my GP and put a complaint in, and he brought up all the, all the appointments I'd had. And I'd been at a GP prior to that, and then during COVID, we had new GPs move in, and they kicked me out of their surgery, and I had to go to his surgery 2 years later. So he took me from 2017, and you could see all the symptoms there. And I'd been diagnosed with Lyme's disease, UTIs.
That's horrific, Lyme's disease. Did you get the rash? Like the
No, I didn't get it. I had cancer. Oh, it was all misdiagnosis, and so
they said you had Lyme's disease.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I've got Oh, for God's sake.
So there was loads of things. Eventually, I got to one of the GPs who put me on the 2 week cancer waiting path. Unfortunately, the the oncologist they gave me was based in Portsmouth, and I'm in Norwich. So she was only at Norwich on a Friday. They didn't have the chemo in for 3 weeks. The matron had to apologise to me. I ended up with fluid in the lungs with cancer cells. I ended up on a corridor for 18 hours, and I ended up having to have my lungs drawn. And then eventually, the only person that was really on track and was brilliant was the gynaecology surgeon, Mr. Duncan. He was the only one. If it hadn't have been for him, I wouldn't have been here. And then eventually another oncologist at the Trust, who's very nice, he took me on as a patient temporarily, and then he said to me, would you like to stay with me? And I said yes. But the catalogue of errors of now, they've just said to me that they did major debulking surgery. I've got it in my spleen, bowel and
what
liver.
What was that called again? Debulking, did you say?
Debulking, so that's from so oncology, that means they take from a woman everything away, part of my bowel. It's my 10-hour surgery. I had to have chemo inserted into me as well.
Do you mind my asking, how old are you? You don't have to answer. How old
no, that's
you?
Right. I'm 58.
And how old were you when it all started?
I was 58, so it's been going on for about 12 months.
Oh, 12 months, I see. Okay, right, okay.
Yeah. So what I've done now is I've gone back to my GP, put a complaint in, and I've they're going to go on training, so right. Ovary training.
This is extraordinary, because when Mr. Kinnock was talking to me, I mean, I would class Norwich as a big city, right? I might understand that a tiny little village on the Norfolk coast might not be in great shape, but dear God, if we can't look after people in the size of a city and the size of Norwich, we're not in a good place, are we?
The problem is there's no funding there, and it's like they've just now employed another oncologist. Mm. So, like, yesterday, I had to have a cold cap on to keep my hair this time. Mm. I was left for an extra 90 minutes because the pharmacy was so busy with a freezing cold cap on my head. So the thing is, that from my perspective, what I felt was the GPs are lacking in training, mm-hmm. but I feel that the hospital doesn't have the funding. And it does, I mean, how can you have an oncologist treating a patient who's based in Portsmouth for 4 days? That's where she lives.
Incredible. I have to ask, how are things looking? What's the prognosis now?
Well, we don't know. The problem is with cancer, they say every patient's different. Mm. So I've just had chemo yesterday, and it was a lot better than it has been before. So it could be anything from 3 to 10 years. Depends.
That you have
to... Yeah. Yeah, and you know what, I work, and as for these people who keep complaining about benefit claims, I wish they would just be quiet. I worked for 35 years full-time, cared for my mother, and I buried her in the middle of this, right, because she died.
Yes.
And, you know, and I had to claim, and I paid all my taxes up for my pension, and I won't even get my pension now. So when these people go on about these benefit claimants, and I've got a neighbour who works for Universal Credit, and I asked him, I said, are there all these people doing all these claims, false claims? He said no. He said there's something about 5%, if that. So these people that keep going on about this honestly do not know what they're talking about.
The only upside is that you seem to have found a great... Is he a specialist or a consultant that you've got now who's looking after you, Tina?
Oh, he's the oncologist.
Oncologist, I'm
sorry. Yeah, he's brilliant. And the and as I say to you, the gynae oncologist at the Norfolk Norwich was brilliant. If it hadn't have been for him, but it was the mismanagement. Yeah. I would say my problem was the mismanagement, lack of funds in the trust, and the fact that the GPs that I saw too many, and they were treating things trivially. And I even had one lady when I said I've got pain in my groin. One GP who was quite rude to me, and it turned out I had ovarian cancer, and she was a locum at the surgery.
Tina, stay in touch. I want to hear how you get on. Is there another big date coming up? You have a different type of treatment. You have more chemo. What?
I've just got another 5 chemo, and then we see whether we've
Over how long a period, Tina?
4.5 months.
Okay. Can you call me in a month or so after you've had another one or two chemo rounds? Would you do that? Let us know how you get on.
Yeah, that'd be lovely, Nick. And just to let you know, my name's Pina, P-I-N-A.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, okay.
I wish you'd
no
said
worries.
Earlier, my apologies, Pina. I do apologise. We'll make sure... Okay, Pina, stay on the line. One of my colleagues will talk to you now. By the way, I apologise again, and that was just a bit of bad luck. We didn't hear you correctly. But let's book in a call so we can talk to you in a few months' time. Pina, again, thank you. Have as good a weekend as you can, obviously, with that health condition. All right, we've been talking about that. We've been talking about asylum seekers. We've been talking about... the future of NATO. Should we try and lift the mood at the moment? Arguably, of course, the biggest awards of the lot. And the nominees are...
Michael B. Jordan in Sinners. Umi Mustafi in Sinners.
Sinners.
Sinners. Sinners.
I think we made the point. 16. Count them. 16. An all-time world record. The record did stand at 14. How many of the 3 films that got 14 nominations can you name? I'll tell you in a minute, but what is the fuss about?
I've been all over this world.
I seen men die in ways I ain't even know was possible.
Love you, brother. Be careful.
I will.
One definition has this film, Sinners, as a vampire horror slash comedy. I've not seen it. I didn't actually know a lot about it. But Leila Latif, film critic and broadcaster, will tell me everything I need to know. If you had to sum up the genre, what would you say, Leila? Morning.
Morning. Historical drama horror musical.
That's getting even more confusing. Is it worthy of 16 nods?
Oh, it absolutely is. I mean, it's just, it got people back into cinemas. Maybe not you, Nick, but a lot of people went to go and see this film at a time where, you know, the film industry has really been on its knees after the strikes and COVID and everything. Ryan Coogler, its director, is just going from strength to strength to strength. The man is not yet 40. He's had like 5 mega hits that have all been critically adored. And it's got an incredible cast with the, you know, a lot of British people in it as well, which I also appreciated.
No, we love all of that. So what is the reality? I mean, what is the world record of actual Oscar winning on the most Oscars cake? And how likely is this to do that kind of business, do you think, Leila?
I don't know what the most wins has been. I think at one point it was Titanic, but I'm not sure if that has since been
beaten. We'll check. But are we looking at 8, 9, 6 wins? What do you think we're looking at?
I think we might not be getting Best Picture.
Right.
But I think it's going to pick up a huge number, a little bit like Mad Max Fury Road did a few years ago. We're going to be winning costumes. We're going to be winning adapted screen. We're going to be winning original screenplay. Probably, I'm really rooting for Wumi Masaku to win supporting actress. I think Delroy Lindo's in a really, really good chance for supporting actor. Like, I think we're going to pick up a lot, but I would still have my money on one battle of the after another for the big prize.
The Times newspaper reports today, these nominations suggest the Academy's contrarian and sometimes political penchant is on show yet again at the ceremony in March. How fair is that, Leila?
I don't think that's particularly fair. I think this is a really, really strong set of nominees. I think you'd be hard pressed to kind of come up with many of them that don't deserve it. And I think it's a nice mix, to be honest. We've got Wagner Moura from Brazil, but he was amazing in The Secret Agent, won Best Actor at Cannes. We've got some kind of older, actors like Ethan Hawke, Benicio del Toro, Sean Penn, you know, like the kind of real Hollywood stars. And then like some cool up-and-coming new stars like Jacob Elordi. And
people,
you know, I think it's a great mix.
Yeah. People are listening to this, as you know, it's a Friday, and someone turns to his wife, someone turns to her husband or whatever, or their partner, their lover, whatever. What do you fancy doing on the weekend? Well, there's a hell of a buzz about this movie, Sinners, isn't it? Should we watch it? Should we go to the pictures? Should we stream it? Sell it in a couple of sentences later. Why should someone... How long? It's not one of these 3.5-hour films, is it, by the way?
No, it's it's a reasonable length.
So how would you sell it?
I would sell it as, like, when I went to go and watch it in the cinema, there was a moment in it that was not sad, but I was still in floods of tears because I was so inspired by what incredible filmmaking I was seeing on screen. Later and that is the moment where it becomes surprisingly a musical, too. So
it's got the lot. Leila Latif, thank you. You're film critic and broadcaster. But will it win the lot? Well, the record for the most Academy Awards won by a single film is 11. There are 3 for that. Ben-Hur, Titanic, and Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King. And until yesterday, there were 3 films that shared the title of the most nods or nominations. And they were, well, Titanic's in there again, as is La La Land, and one that some of you won't have even heard of, because it goes back to the 50s, I think, All About Eve. Should we stay with American matters? Some people have concerns over the president's emotional health. What of his physical health? Well, here's his diet, according to Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
He eats really bad food, which is McDonald's, and then, you know, candy and a Diet Coke. He has the constitution of a deity. I don't know how he's alive, but he is.
We'll have a report on that after this. It's 9:45, LBC News Headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Russia will join direct peace talks with officials from Ukraine and the US for the first time later. President Trump is facing a major backlash for claiming NATO soldiers avoided the front line in the war in Afghanistan. And the number of police forces in England and Wales is set to be cut drastically from the current level of 43. LBC weather cloudy for most with spells of rain. Some sunny spells for central and southern areas, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are long delays on the M25 in both directions to Junction 11 at Chertsey. It's after two separate accidents. All the lanes are open on both sides of the motorway, but it's still very slow. Also, one lane's closed on the A13 eastbound at Canning Town, and that's where a lorry has broken down. London Overground's Windrush line has no service between Surrey Quays and Clapham Junction, and that's following a signal failure. On the Underground, there are minor delays on the Metropolitan line going northbound between Wembley Park and Harrow on the Hill, and that's because of a signal failure at Northwick Park. And also on the Underground, Warren Street station is open for exit only because of a problem with the escalators.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Imagine loving the racism, the misogyny and the climate change denial so much that you ended up a cheerleader for a man who maligns the memory of your own war dead.
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Quick question. Well, actually three, but they are quick. One, do you have a car? Two, are you looking to save on your car insurance? And three, do you have a Tesco club card? Well, if you do, you could get exclusive club card prices when you take out or renew a policy with Tesco Car Insurance. And with three levels of cover available, you can choose the one that's right for you. Over a million club card members are already saving money. So just search online for Tesco Car Insurance.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal. Right now, get 3 months free when you take out Saga Health Insurance. You get 24/7 GP access whenever you want it. And the freedom to choose your preferred private hospital with your own room should you need it. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. New customers starting a policy before the 19th of February. Pay by monthly direct debit for the first year. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Ready? Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
A Southern Train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear "all change, please," you'll know you already have. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Back to calls from Crowborough in a moment, but let's pick up, as many have this week spent much of the week questioning President Trump's emotional well-being, what of his physical well-being, particularly the food he seems to eat continually? Well, let's turn to Henry Riley, LBC's reporter Henry Riley, who's been delving into this. Henry, what have you discovered?
Well, Nick, good morning. Yes, Donald Trump's physical health has been thrust back into the spotlight after comments from the US Secretary for Health and Human Services, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., or RFK Jr. Here he was speaking earlier this week.
You know, the interesting thing about the president is that he eats really bad food, which is McDonald's and Diet Coke. But drinks the Diet Coke all times. He has the constitution of a deity. I don't know how he's alive, but he is. But he says that the only time that he eats the junk food is when he's on the road, and he wants to eat food from big corporations because he trusts it. He doesn't want to get sick when he's on the road.
So when he's on the road, he eats this stuff, we're told. As he's in Davos at the moment, it can be assumed that he is on said road and so eating junk food, often from his favourite place.
When Trump Force One, prior to ascending to Air Force One, which is quite a nice plane also, we served only McDonald's almost every time. On occasion, we couldn't find one, which is pretty hard to believe. We'd go another route. But we really did. You fed us very well. And I even got Bobby Kennedy to eat a Big Mac. And he told me he loved it.
Now, I've been delving into this, Nick. I'm delighted to report the president's diet, once reported by one of his aides, is McDonald's French fries, a quarter pounder hamburger, a Big Mac, and a filet o fish, and a chocolate milkshake. That's nearly 2,800 calories. He does mix it up. Another aide says sometimes it's two Big Macs, two filet o fish, and a chocolate milkshake. He doesn't eat breakfast. He regularly goes sort of 14 hours without eating, so he eats this all sort of in one go. If he wants to snack, it's Doritos nacho cheese. He doesn't have coffee. All he drinks is Diet Coke.
How healthy is this, Henry?
Oh, it sounds appalling.
There's only one way to find out. You haven't got any family birthdays or something this weekend, have you?
No, actually on LBC one of the days. Oh, there we go, yeah.
So if I was to ask you to exist on a diet of other burger chains are available, Burger King, McDonald's with occasional nachos and cheese, are you up for it?
And only drinking Diet Coke.
And only drinking Diet Coke. And we'll look the other way on alcohol. But are you up for it? And report back on Monday. Are you ready to take the Henry Reilly, Nick Ferrari McDonald's challenge?
I mean, yeah, sure. It sounds appalling,
though. So I've spoken to my doctor, and you need a health check. I've got here have you ever had your blood pressure taken?
No, I haven't, actually.
Have you ever had a pulse oximeter used on you?
Don't even know what that is.
Right, get yourself over here.
Oh, lovely.
Let's do the pulse oximeter. Now, the doctor's told me what we've got to hope for here. Right, come here. This is great radio, I know. Let's get this right. Put your finger in there, right to the back.
Yeah.
And I'm going to press this, and a digital display. Don't move it at all. And we're now going to get... This is going to give us your... Let me get this absolutely right. This is going to give you your heartbeats per minute... And oxygen in the blood. Right, that's what I need.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I wrote that down. Okay. Are you on medication?
No.
Are you using recreational drugs?
Absolutely not.
You might want to... Are you pregnant?
No, not yet.
Right, okay. Blood pressure... I'm so sorry. Your oximeter, heartbeats per minute, should be between 60 and 100.
You're at 89.
Is that good or bad? Well, it's high for your age. Oxygen in your blood, 95 to 100. You come in at 98. So, yeah, you're good to proceed. Now, can you put this around? Have you ever taken your blood pressure?
No.
Right, roll your... under your cuff, quickly.
Right, oh, God, sorry.
Here we go. Put your hand flat to me like that.
Yeah.
Like that. Like this. Yeah, here we go.
Damn
here we go.
Thing.
Here we go. Is that fairly tight?
Yeah.
Right, here we go.
A bit too tight.
Here we go. Go.
Oh, my God.
Oh! Right, this is...
I don't love that. Oh, it's getting on tighter.
There we go. Yes, it should get... Don't scream. Oh, sorry. It's getting tighter.
I don't like that.
Here we go. Now, this, for your age, should come in... You could have 120 over 80, 140 over 90. Have you ever had your blood pressure taken?
No.
Have you been drinking this morning?
Not this morning.
God.
Is it good or bad news?
Well, no, that can't be right. I'll do it again. Right. You should be dead. Okay. Right, well, check your blood pressure. 180 over 111. It must have gone wrong. You'd be dead. Right, you will take the McDonald's challenge. Henry Reilly will report back on Monday. He will live just on burgers and what was it?
Filet-o-fish.
Nachos and cheese.
And Diet Coke.
What
yes.
time are you on air tomorrow?
Is it tomorrow? So I'm on tomorrow 6 till 9 and Sunday 3 till 6.
Eating McDonald's in LBC.
Eating McDonald's.
Burger King. There are other burger chains available. Henry will report back on his challenge. Right, let's go to some more serious matters and get back to Crowborough. Under the cover of darkness, they brought those people in, but is it fair? Neem in Enfield. Neem, what do you say? Good morning.
Hello.
Yes, Neem, your view of what's happening down in Crowborough.
Hello.
Yeah, Neem, can you hear me? I sense Neem can't hear me. Let's try Munesh. Munesh in Southall, can you hear me?
Good morning, Nick.
Yes,
how
Munesh.
Are you?
Yeah, good. Your view of what's happening in Crowborough.
Yeah, I think you hit it in a nutshell. The government can't stop the immigrants coming in, but where do we put them? So there's two solutions here. One, we have to find a short-term measure, and one is a long-term measure.
What's the long-term one?
I think Chagos Islands. Let's put them all in Chagos Islands.
We haven't got them anymore, unfortunately.
Well, we haven't given it away yet, so why not just flood it with all the immigrants and let the Mauritians deal with it? So that's long term. Let's go to the short term. I think short term, the army bases are pretty much the best solution because they're well secured, they're well fenced in, and there's in and out entry which is guarded. So if we can contain the immigrants with inside, because inside you do have medical facilities, you do have supermarkets, so it's very, very much self-sufficient. So there's no need for the people from outside to be worried.
Munesh, thank you. Neem in Enfield, you've got about a minute, Neem. Thank you, Munesh.
Sorry.
Yeah, Neem, go ahead.
Hi, first time caller. No, I just thought I'd chime in and say,
please,
as a daughter of a refugee who's settled in Europe, my parents really benefited from fleeing a war. Mm-hmm. And whose responsibility is it to look after refugees when we in the Western world have gone and colonized countries and divided and conquered?
Yes.
It kind of begs the question, well, if we have caused this issue, why are we not facing the consequences and looking after the people who really need the help?
All I would say is that for the folk of Crowborough, who are now nervous about that, they probably weren't involved in any of those wars, and they would argue that they're now having to reap the whirlwind, is what they would say.
Yeah, and I get that. And, you know, when we see someone who's, I suppose, alien to us with a different culture and different kind of background, we're going to be scared, just like, you know, alien from Mars might land on Earth and we might be worried. But at the same time, just from my first-hand experience, having, had refugee parents, they came to this country. Yes, they did receive benefits, but also we actually settled in a different European country first, where we had, and my parents benefited from integration classes.
Neem, you had the last word. Thank you. I just want to carve out 30 seconds. People are excited about the Henry Riley McDonald's challenge. When I was teaching in China, I lived off Burger King and Pizza Hut. I put on weight and I'm still trying to lose. Martin says, if Henry Riley's blood pressure is, if you've just read, he needs to see a doctor quickly. Jemima in Bristol says, I've spent the last week living on Greg's sausage rolls. I think I've got coronary disease. Mm-hmm. Let's see how Henry, and you can hear him live on LBC through the course of the weekend to see if he survives. And hopefully he'll be back with us on Monday. Now, don't forget to tune in next week. And particularly in relevance to our Crowborough conversation, Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood will join us in the studio to take your calls from the Crowborough Barracks, illegal boat crossings, and, of course, this much-touted and long-awaited reform to police. That's on Tuesday from 7. If you missed today's show, listen back on Global Player or the LBC app. You can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinions. Put your news catches in the order you want. Pause and rewind live radio. Download the app for free from your app store now. That's it for the week. James O'Brien's waiting the other side of the news on LBC. I'm back with you Monday morning from 7 with hopefully Henry Riley. Meantime, have a safe weekend.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and I've been reflecting on the words of Mike in Greenwich from earlier in this week. The three things that cheerleaders for, fans of Donald Trump, people who somewhat humiliatingly deployed that phrase, Trump derangement syndrome, to describe those of us warning what was going to happen, have been left now cheering for a man who has, maligned the memories of our war dead, danced on the graves of men and women who made the ultimate sacrifice, insulted the people that so-called patriots like to pretend they care deeply about. Do you think it will change the way that they talk about, for example, refugees and asylum seekers, or will they continue on the path of dehumanizing and othering?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, 2 days of peace talks between US, Ukrainian and Russian officials have started in the United Arab Emirates. It's the first three-way discussion since Moscow's invasion of Ukraine began in 2022. Ukraine's Volodymyr Zelensky says the discussions in Abu Dhabi will be all about the land. Jim Townsend is a former White House defence official and has told LBC it remains a major sticking point.
It would be great if there was some type of agreement on what they might do about the land situation, the Donbas, how much of the Donbas should Ukraine retain. If they can come up with an approach that both Trump and Zelensky can agree on, and they can then present that to the Russians, that would be helpful to at least get the dialogue started.
The Danish Prime Minister and head of NATO have held emergency talks to discuss the future of Greenland. Mette Frederiksen and Mark Rutte met in Brussels earlier this morning after a framework of a deal was struck on Wednesday. It led to President Trump rowing back on US threats to seize the Danish-owned territory, but it's not clear what was agreed. Donald Trump is facing calls to apologise after claiming NATO troops didn't join the front line in Afghanistan. He's renewed his criticism of the alliance in an interview with an American broadcaster. More than 450 British personnel were killed during the conflict. Former Tory Defence Secretary Dame Penny Mordaunt has told LBC British forces performed incredible actions in Afghanistan.
The SAS and the SBS did incredible things to save US hostages. The RAF, the Army Air Corps and the Royal Marines, again, putting their lives in danger. Incredible actions to rescue and retrieve US personnel. It is of course not true what the president has said, and you're right to point to how the next of kin might be feeling this morning having listened to that.
The number of police forces in England and Wales is set to be cut drastically. Major reforms are expected to be announced next week, aimed at freeing up resources to tackle crime. And there are calls for improved mental health support for headteachers in England. The union, the NAHT, is warning that burnout's driving experienced leaders away from the profession. Research suggests nearly half of school leaders needed specialist help in the past year. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 24 at 10,174. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy for most with spells of rain. Some sunny spells will develop for central and southern areas later. A high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
That there is a great night's sleep. And when Susan wakes up, she's going to get to enjoy a delicious unlimited breakfast. Or, if that super comfy bed is just too hard to leave, Susan can enjoy a midday checkout. Get better sleep for your money. Book now at Premier Inn. Breakfast subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time. It's Friday already. I don't know how this week has unfolded for you, but goodness me, I now understand, if I didn't already, and between you and me, I did, why the Chinese say, may you live in interesting times, as a curse. When I was a younger man, wet behind the ears, callow, idealistic, untainted by the cynicism of maturity, I used to think it was like a good luck thing. I used to think it was, may you live in interesting times. Oh, thanks, mate. Yeah, I'd love to live in interesting times. Nah. Nope, 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 nope. Give me dull times. Give me sunshine. Give me uninteresting times. Any day of the week. And what did I say to you yesterday? As if to prove the point that we would barely have finished ranting and raving about the absurdity of a board of peace populated by war criminals and genocide apologists, and then the next thing would come along that we were going to get angry about, animated by, and we'd start talking about that as well. But you have to. I realise this. You absolutely have to. You can't stop. If you stop, it becomes even more normalised than it is already. In this country now, I have resisted the urge to turn to our favourite unhinged columnist this morning Because I can't wait to see. I thought I'd do it live with you. We'll open up the Daily Mail and see what Dick Littlejohn has to say about Donald Trump essentially dancing on the graves of our war dead. Because as his biggest cheerleader in the UK media, presumably this is the moment that he acknowledges the gravity of his error. Because right-wing columnists like nothing more, and indeed right-wing broadcasters, like nothing more than to trumpet their admiration for and support of our military. You know, it is the absolute gospel truth that they bow to nobody in their patriotic fervour for supporting our boys, particularly when there are some immigrants to moan about and you can pretend that you care about homeless veterans. So you know and I know that these people are so honest and clear in their commitment to the military that I cannot wait to see what they have had to say about what Donald Trump did yesterday. But I should probably apologise first because you may not know. And if you don't know, I'm sorry. I'm sorry because it's gross. If you lost somebody in Afghanistan particularly, but any really member of the military in your family or a friend, then you will find it even more hideous than the rest of us do. But the reason why I apologise is because we're already breaking our rule. Or are we? I don't know, because you can't not talk about it. But we are part of the problem that we described yesterday. We're moving on to the next thing. Perfectly possible that they will too. This ludicrous board of pitch. You know what he's already done? He's already told Mark Carney, you can't be in it anyway. So Mark Carney doesn't want to be in it. So Donald Trump has sent him a public message saying, you can't be in it. I don't know how old you are, but when you were 13, you probably had a mate who got dumped and insisted that he'd actually done the dumping. Do you remember? She didn't dump me, I dumped her. That's the sort of behaviour you might expect from a 13-year-old boy. The President of the United States is now doing exactly the same thing in the context of geopolitics, saying to somebody who has dumped him, you didn't dump me, I dumped you. So, I mean, it's beyond pathetic, but here we are. Here we are. Have a listen. There's, I mean, it needs a little bit of context, perhaps. For example, Article 5 of NATO has only been triggered once. It was triggered by the United States of America after the Twin Towers attack, and it meant that their NATO allies joined them in Afghanistan. Something we may talk about a little later. I don't fully understand the relationship that the average member of our military has with our country's NATO commitments. It's something I found myself thinking about this morning and being a little bit fascinated by in advance of the things that you are going to tell me. It's true, I think, that we are the second biggest, what would you say, sacrifice? We made that British military made the second biggest sacrifice during that 20-year deployment in Afghanistan. UK troops second only to the United States in making the ultimate sacrifice. Denmark, and I didn't know this, Denmark lost 44 soldiers to our 457 military personnel. That would not just be combat troops. There will be people caught in crossfire and people killed who were working in offices and things like that. But we lost 457 personnel in Afghanistan over a 20-year period. 2,000 military and civilian personnel were wounded. In addition to that, France, Germany and Italy suffered deaths. But what I didn't know was that Denmark, which of course has found itself very much in Donald Trump's sights this week, Denmark was the biggest per capita contributor to this hideous death toll. In terms of the relationship between how many soldiers they lost and the overall total population of the country, Denmark was had the highest per head death toll among coalition forces in Afghanistan. And this is what Donald Trump had to say yesterday.